This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey, all right. No reason to be wary of these Ides of March, because Weekend Confirmed is here to protect you. There will be no knives in your back. Mr. Jeff Cannata is back. No knife in his back.
So excited to be back.
Knifeless.
I was supposed to be back last week.
2-1 team.
That's me.
But you were rolling in the dough.
Well, yeah, I appreciate.
Well, yeah.
Congratulations, dude. Come on. It's like, come on. Let's give him a big round of applause.
Thank you.
Jeff Cannata bringing you soon a much anticipated show.
So anticipated, like the pressure, man.
Yeah, there is a lot of pressure. I have to thank every single person. If you don't know what we're talking about, which is possible if you're not following me on Twitter, because really that's the only place I've talked about it so far, other than a few other NSFW and TNT guest appearances. But I did launch a Kickstarter for a new video show. You can check it out if you go to my website, jeffcannata.com with 2 N's, 1 T. There's a link there, and it's doing very well, and I really, really appreciate everybody's support. It's absolutely been mind-boggling and has blown me away. But I will say this. We're really trying to – I'm trying to find a home for this new show, and literally every backer counts. So if you want to show your support, even with a dollar, right now what I'm trying to do is raise the number of backers so I can go to a distributor and say, hey, look how many people – really want this. So it would mean a lot to me, and I appreciate everybody that's already supported the show. It's awesome. So thank you.
And the only guy grumpier than me in video games journalism, Mr. Marcus Annoyed Gamer Beer, is here.
Don't call me a journalist, for fuck's sake.
Hey.
I'm an opinionist.
You've been on before, right?
Yeah, I was on, was it November, I think it was?
I don't think I was here for that.
No, you were off on
How'd you miss
vacation?
That?
I don't know. But we did bonus round together.
We did one of the better bonus rounds.
I would agree.
I would
mostly because we were on it.
I would certainly say the most handsome bonus round.
Pat yourself on the back just a little more. It'd be good.
Well, Garnet, you've done some good bonus rounds.
No, it's all right. It's fine. It's fine. But these are the best.
It's been good ones, but not Kickstarter worthy.
Oh, exactly. Good to have you here, dude.
Thank you for having me back. I'm very excited.
Excited to launch you into your vacation.
Yeah, this is my second to last media gig before I bugger off for 2 weeks.
So for your honeymoon.
Yeah, belated honeymoon. Belated Congrats. Honeymoon, yeah. We've been together 7 years, so it was about time she made an honest man of me. So, yes, we have a week in Wales with my family, and then we're going to France.
Wow. Awesome.
Yes, and wait, I've saved the very best for last, because I know you all are all excited about Gears of War Judgment coming out here, you know, this coming week. So we had to make sure that you knew all about the story to Gears of War.
There's only one person that can summarize stories on this show.
God, who could it be?
There's only one person who can deliver that with this sort of dramatic intensity.
Joie de vivre.
God, the buildup, you guys. Come
on.
Yeah,
it's a lot of pressure, right?
Yeah.
It's almost too much.
Yeah, you guys want to give me some money for it?
Nicole Zavalich's game story time would
well,
be a
that would crush.
That's
yeah.
a Kickstarter
crush.
Project right there.
Later, guys. Pace yourselves.
Pace yeah. yourselves. All right. So that's what we got coming up on the show. In addition, those of you who were disconcerted that we had not covered Tomb Raider, we were just keeping it because, you know, the two guys here who joined me have both finished it. I've been playing it quite a bit. We wanted to give you the full intensity of Lara discussion that I'm sure you can imagine awaits as I tell you about how I liked it but don't love it, and let Jeff tell me about how he loves everything.
I do love this game.
We'll still talk about some SimCity. We got a little Lego City Undercover. When that game came into the office the other day, Andrew pulls it out and he goes, "Holy crap, it's a Wii U game. I haven't seen one of these in months."
They do exist.
Well, that was like a white elephant.
It was like cabs in LA that haven't seen one for months, and then two arrive in 1 week with Monster Hunter 3.
And I'm super stoked for that. I am so excited for that. I almost wore the shirt for you today.
I have the shirt at home. Unfortunately, it's too figure hugging for a man of my portly persuasion.
I think you'd look.
I think you'd look fantastic.
Oh, shut up! You just want to see my huge rack.
It's true.
I don't even know how to follow that up. Yeah, but Monster Hunter, that's coming up, and we will be covering that. As a matter of fact, I was just tweeting the other day about how the spring deluge, the dam has broken. I mean, it's kind of actually ridiculous how many games.
StarCraft! We haven't even mentioned that.
An online game that's launched properly.
Wow.
Go figure.
Yeah.
I feel like we should, you know, I actually saw that, unfortunately, if you guys who listen to Giant Bomb, you know Brad's in the cellar a little bit sick, and he's their go-to guy for real-time strategy. Brad is quite proficient at the real-time strategy games. And Leahy jumped in, was like, oh, I could go do it for you guys. I thought we should... Dave, we should reach out to Leahy again.
You know? Oh, man, I miss
I like
that
Brian,
guy.
And I miss him, and I don't know why we... But we should have Brian on to talk some StarCrafts. He will school the shit out of us.
Well, obviously.
Because, you know...
We are not worthy of his... I mean, he's awesome, and I always loved hearing him talk about Deep Strat. I also want to say, as you bring up former co-hosts of the show,
yes.
I haven't been on since the sadness that was losing Jeff and Ryan, and I hope if those guys are listening, I hope they know how much they are missed and how much they were appreciated, and lots of love going out to both of them for their contributions to the show, and friends that will be sorely missed.
Indie Jeff Mattis will not be off. I mean, he will be back.
I sincerely hope
he
so.
Better be back.
He
better
awesome.
Be listening too. If he's not listening.
And forget everything we just said.
Yes. He's not something, something, something. All right. I don't want to talk about SimCity because I know SimCity is going to go. I know how that conversation is going to go. We're going to save that for a little bit down the road because Marcus has been playing it. I've actually been playing the game now that you can play it more. And my opinion is not that favorable all the time about it. I mean, there's some pieces that have potential, you know, like when
save
it comes
for later,
when it comes out
sake,
of alpha.
He's like, oh, well, we're going to talk about it.
I mean, I always do that.
But now I'm going to talk about how I really don't like it. I've
been using your quote from last week. I think you summed up that game so succinctly, Garnett. And kudos to you because I've been using that quote. You said it's not Sim City, it's City of Sims, which I think says it so well and is such a interesting... I think that was the design philosophy, quite honestly.
All right, so are we diverting into SimCity then?
Not necessarily. I just wanted to give you mad props.
I have a quote for you. It's called Pretty Shitty City.
Oh. Well, that's...
All right, so we started SimCity. We'll talk about SimCity. Then we'll have something. We'll have like the rich, creamy center of Tomb Raider to come back to.
Yeah, we've got to get through the drag first.
All right, so SimCity now, playable, and... Marcus has already like said, I'm shelving the damn thing.
Well, like I started off and I was as excited as anybody when it was announced a year ago at GDC and we saw this trailer and it was like, whoa. And then I got the code, downloaded it, and I was really into it whenever I could get into it because I was getting a feel for it. I played the beta. I thought the beta was, you know, great, a great taster. And then after approximately 12, 14 hours of my SimCity, it begins to occur to me that, one, this is not fun anymore. Two, it's kind of broken. And yes, I mean, when the SimCity social game on Facebook is actually more entertaining than your $60 version.
Explain to me why it's not fun anymore. Because I have
That's
not...
the big problem.
I just when all that hullabaloo was happening with not being able to log in, I said, it's sitting on my hard drive, and I said, you know what? I'm not even going to put myself through that. I've got this other great game over here, Tomb Raider, waiting for me. I'm just going to play that through, and when everything simmers down, I'll jump into SimCity. So I haven't jumped in. All I've done is played a crap ton of the beta. So tell me why it was not fun.
Well, let's kick off with the AI. The AI, the Sims, the Simlets, the little bastards who I'm really happy to just let die. I mean, one of the high points for me is just taking a bulldozer through the entire town once I've
but that
absolutely
sounds fun.
Raped them for taxes. I mean, you've created your city, you do what I do. I mean, I build it, I get all the basic functionality there, and then I just let it sit for a while, normally on cheetah mode, which isn't an option anymore. But I let it go, build the money up, and I'll come back then and I'll start enhancing and tweaking. And when I've got little, you know, I've got Sims saying, I love this neighborhood, there's so many great places to shop, and I've got a flashing icon that says I need to put more stores in because everybody, you know, is like or there's not enough stores, or there are too many stores, the stores don't have enough customers, and yet I've got all these little bubbles above what my house is saying, yeah, we're really happy, everything's great. That's kind of misleading for a start. It just like just takes you out of it. Then we can talk about the traffic situation where the road systems...
Well, don't leave the sim part behind yet because I think that's a really big issue. That's a huge issue. So, Jeff, I mean, I've seen this as well. Like, either the sim is broken or the connective tissue between what's actually happening and the communication that it gives you is broken. But one way or the other, I fix something or create a service that provides a need inside the city, and it's as if it didn't happen, as far as I can tell from what's being fed back to me.
This city's
really filled with germs. Put in a clinic. Put in a bunch of...
Was this a problem in the past games? Or is this something they failed to fix? Or is it something that got worse?
It's something that doesn't... It's as if it's not reporting through all of the sims. It's like you come to me, like, let's say you're one of the sims, Nicole, and you're like, oh, look, I'm hurt and I can't get to medical facilities. I say, oh, I'm the mayor. I need to give them a medical facility. So I save up my simoleons. I drop my medical facility. I give it enough time to where the little green lines are out, spread out through all the
area. I'm dead already. You took way too long.
And now you should be able to get medical facilities, right? But yet you're still standing in front of the courthouse or in front of the city council, city hall, protesting, going, there's no place for me to get health. And I'm like, well, you're full of crap. It's been fixed for a year.
Oh, let's look at the rent situation.
Part of the disease I have.
The rent is too damn high, committee. They're always out the front, even though I have zoned a whole area that I've like geared for sort of like low income housing, if you will. I've put like the nice parks in there, but it's the low, you know, the low income parks, and really sort of like zoned it, made sure there's bus connections and everything. And the tax rate is, you know, I've lowered it down, you know, on the actual sims and raised it on commercial properties, and they're still all outside having a bitch and a moan. And it's one of those things, because you're playing in the small environment. So let's talk about the small environment.
Well,
where else can you go? I mean, you can't, if you want to build,
you're
up,
supposed to be relying on the other cities in your region.
I just want to quickly point out the irony of you guys complaining about people standing outside and bitching and moaning in this conversation. But go ahead.
But they're sitting. They're sitting. So it's completely different.
Go right ahead.
But you know, it's the same thing with commercial. You'll have people sitting around in their neighborhood saying, there's no good places to shop around here. When A, you have commercial that's nearby that is populated and working, and you have no or even negative commercial demand, especially if you're in a region that's already been. So
one of the things called commercial? What are you?
So in the game, you have three different types of area zoning. So you're playing like the planning commission. And one of the zones you can drop is commercial. And when you make a commercial zone, then people come and put stores in that zone. And so if you want shopping centers, then you drop commercial space and you let them come back and fill it in with stores. And if there are Sims that want to come shop, then they'll come shop at the store and the store will make money and the store will stay. But what I'm saying is what happens is there'll be Sims standing around outside their house and they'll be like, there's no good place to shop here. And then you'll say, okay, well, I've already got this much commercial, and yet I'll be looking at my commercial and go, not only do I have that much, but out of all this stretch, there's about 10% of these stores that are closing and failing because there's not enough commercial demand.
Yeah. And then you've got the education side of it where it's like, we need a school. All right, you've got your school. And there's not enough classrooms, so I've got the classrooms. And then I've built a high school and your community college. And I'm still getting told that all my factories are closing because they don't have enough skilled workers. I mean, it seems like there is just somebody at Maxis who is in charge of, you know, the asshole department, where it's like, my job is to make Sims as asshole-ish as possible just to screw with you.
Well, is there any kind of lag between when those things are, you know, put into your city and when they can start outputting?
I mean, you remember
useful,
like playing, it's normally you remember a playing day. SimCity 4, right? And you'd like put something in and then you'd wait and you could literally see as it started to fix things and things would get into
better
shape.
That's not the case here?
No, you can basically slap on a medical center, have half a dozen ambulances ready to go, two or three outpatient wings, all in there very, very quickly if you've got enough money to do so. And then you just sit back and watch. And even though, you know, these things are fully staffed and ready to go right away, you're still going to have people bitching and moaning.
Even though they're servicing the population. So even though you're looking at your clinic and it says, I can treat 25 patients and I'm treating 20 of 25, so you're not overloaded, you still have people outside going, I can't get any medical help. You're like, well, there's a why not? It's
maybe
here.
The game's too accurate. Like, you listen to how poorly.
Yeah,
like,
maybe
the
none of your Sims have Twitter, and they're just not aware of this.
Or
in
health
town
insurance.
Yet.
They don't have universal health care yet.
Right. It's just slow moving information systems.
It's a real problem. It's another problem that the game. Like, the game has a number of simulation based problems. Another big one is that the pathing for all of these service providers is always identical. So if you have if you have police cars coming out of a police station, they're always following the same patrol route, one right behind the other, right behind the other. Or if you have garbage trucks that are collecting trash, they're following along one behind the other, behind the other. So the first one is picking up everything and filling up and then leaving. Meanwhile, the other one is right behind it, stuck. The other one behind, right behind it, stuck.
That's a union issue. Really?
There's no remote, like, attempt to make any sort of, you know, fibrous networking route where they go out and actually service the neighborhood. It's just a bunch of it reminds me of all the way back to, like, the, remember the Egyptian era city building games. They were city building classics, and they had walkers, and you had to, like, put these little poles down in the street to prevent them from walking on the streets, because you could actually control where the walkers went to service different areas. Why is that? Anyway, someone's going to go, like, of course they know the name of that game. It was an old Sierra game. There was, like, three of
Pharaoh?
Them. Yeah, that was one of them. Pharaoh, and there were two others in this City Builder series. But anyway, those were good games, and they actually knew the limitation of their walkers servicing system, and you had poles that you put down so that they would stop. So, you know, if you had someone coming out of the pottery factory, they would walk this certain route based off of where you put poles to stop them from walking and go around in a different place. I mean, Sim to City doesn't even have that. It just, the trucks just go out and they go to the same spots
all
the time.
Well, they can't have that because they have to do all the computation server side.
Oh, of course.
Which means that your high-end gaming PC that is so powerful it could probably run 50 copies of SimCity 2000 concurrently, that, you know, your PC can't handle it.
This is starting the show off with a major negative push, and that's fine. I just, is there a silver lining to this in any way that as an online experience, as a service type game, that it will evolve in the same way MMOs do?
It's
that,
really not a service, Jeff.
I understand that, but it's built as on always
it was,
on.
No, it was. I think you meant to say build. Because it was billed as, but it really, it turns out, really wasn't so much built as.
Well,
is there any
chance that this game will evolve in a more timely fashion than other single player games?
Well, you
tend
know, I mean,
to?
You could make an argument even that a game on the scope of SimCity being announced just a year ago, who knows how much pre-production time it had before then, that the whole thing's been ramped up and developed way too quickly.
They've been saying that they've been working on this for the best part of 5 years.
This version, I don't.
No,
buy
it sounds
that.
SimCity.
Yeah, I think they've been working on a new SimCity for a decade, but they've had fits and starts.
Well, I think the only way they can fix this is, one, give us what everybody wants, which is the
I'm back, everyone.
Yes, give us a lightsaber. That would be fantastic. No, basically, give us the single player patch that we all want so we can go back to creating our entire regions. And, you know, this whole region thing is bunkum, by the way. The fact that I can create a small city and then I've annexed the region and I'm like, I'm going to build, all right, this is going to be my main hub for education and law enforcement.
Yep.
And then I go to my second region and I start building. And because I have to keep on going back and checking in on the other city, the momentum is totally screwed. The transportation between the two is not very, very friendly. And, give a single player. Give a single player huge regions, no boundaries. Let us create what we want to do.
Yeah.
Or at least release some form of server, you know, server software that we can host our own servers and do our own little thing without having to worry about connecting to Origin all the time.
I do wish there was a true single player mode that allowed you to have one gigantic city like the SimCities of old.
That's what everybody wants.
I just don't. The thing that bothers me, I think, the most about it, again, having not really played it other than the beta, is it doesn't seem to me that's how real cities work. It doesn't seem to me that there is the city that specializes in this and the city that specializes in that and the city that specializes in that. Like,
well, that's a very utopian.
Or a coal town.
I guess maybe.
It's a very utopian ideal.
Right. So in a game whose goal purports to be giving you a simulation of a city,
yeah, but I mean,
forcing it to specialize like and compartmentalize like that seems odd.
I think the sim part of SimCity stopped talking about simulation after we had was it Sim Ant Farm or whatever it was? I mean,
Sim Ant was awesome.
But I mean, I'm not dissing those games. I'm just saying that they're not really the Sims that stood for simulation. They are Sims that are from the Sims game, which are these god-awful, annoying individual computer people who basically exist in my mind just to be tortured anally day after day.
Well, that's certainly one way to go. And I think I would, I think ironically, Maxis would encourage that if that's the kind of play style you want to do. If you're an
I'd pay
anally,
for simanal rendering.
But
they would encourage that. But, no, probably not.
Well, I mean, I think that there was always that with the Sims.
No,
it was
anal
always
sim
like
culture.
If you're into, you know, making your Sims miserable, that's certainly your play style.
Which I was.
You ask what the silver lining is. There's certainly potential. I mean, look, the game is attractive. It does a very good job of creating a believable looking day cycle of the city where you watch the Sims go out and go get in their cars and go to work, and the traffic patterns go in and out of the city, and the way the lighting, you know, the sun comes up and the sun goes down, and you have these 3D cities and you can pan around them, and all that's very pretty, right? But it's that only heightens, you know, it's that moment when you're watching the ambulance whisk out of your hospital to go try and get to somebody who has and bring them back, and you realize that there's so many broken things between it and there that's like so cool, but that the whole rest of the thing is just falling apart in so many places. You know, for instance, right off the bat when you start playing the game, and one of the things that people have brought up on the forums is that they seem to be fluffing the numbers, in that when you get to later part of the game, like Marcus did, when you get up like 100,000 population city, really, if you look at it and do the number crunching, it's more like, what's it, like 15,000, they say? 15,000, 20,000, something like that?
I haven't been aware of that. I follow the number and I just watch everybody moan.
When you're early on in this game, it was something I was talking about last week with traffic design, and I'm even more convinced of it now. The traffic design, and by this I mean strictly the roads and cars, is really borked. You can lay out a very efficient set of feeders and arterials, like a good traffic circulation flow, and watch it go to hell because,
again, too accurate. The 405 has another year of construction.
But you can also, I mean,
you watch streams of cars go into dead end cul-de-sacs for no reason.
And yeah, they'll just turn around. But I mean,
you've
actually
done that, right, Nicole?
I can explain all of this.
Nicole spent like 36 hours in a dead end cul-de-sac just the other week, right?
It happens.
One of the amusing things is if you actually bulldoze two ends of a road, there will be cars that will just be going around in circles.
Oh, really?
They will just sit there, and it'll be the night cycle will fall, and you'll see the little headlights going round.
Which
and
is
round
bizarre
around.
Because you think, well, the first answer is you'd say, oh, well, they have no place to go. But the second thing is they have no place to go. They shouldn't be generating trips. There should be no trips generated because there's no place for them to go.
Yeah. Well, where's my undo button? Well, whatever happened to you when
don't even get started on that. We talked about that last week. You're like trying to move around and shit, you hit the left button on your mouse if you have a sensitive mouse, and then something drops and you're like, oh, that was $12,000.
Yeah. Oh, try doing it with an $80,000 university.
And I can't move it. And I can't do anything with it. And there's no back. All I can do is bulldoze it and pay another 80 for someplace else.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the SimCity game on Facebook has more functionality and is more enjoyable.
Yeah, I was wow.
And the time, so one of the things Mark was talking about in single player is really heightened when you play multiplayer. Appeal sounds really cool, right? We're all in the same region, and I want to play it with you. I want you to play with me as well.
It does sound like you want to play it.
Here's the thing is, I mean, it's still SimCity. This is, I think, the other complaint that players have is that this is the SimCity we have in 2013, and we want to play it because we want to do the things that SimCity does. It's still really rewarding to look, the kick to this game, I think, for most people is laying out a basic skeleton and then adding the different pieces of stimulus that get land and property values to rise and get density to rise and see your city develop. It's like you're watering a plant and getting it to grow.
Yeah.
And when it grows,
it's
and flourishes, it's really satisfying. Yeah. And you can still get that to happen. There's a lot of pieces of feedback that don't come very easily here. For as much as they said they streamline things, you have to really dig through things and go, okay, this will raise property values in a medium wealth zone and it has this much range, and trying to get things to work together, the systems. But that's also part of the learning process, right? That's part of, I think there's also some fun to being in that stage of, oh, I got to figure out how the city works. I got to figure out how these Sims work within it. But the undermining of that is then when it doesn't work in a logical way and things seem broken, that you're like, well, damn it, that's really frustrating because I thought I figured out how this is working, but it's just really not working right.
Well, after all this, are you going to keep playing it?
Yeah, I'll keep playing it. Okay. I mean, I won't keep playing it all. I will probably go through a cycle of playing it. I'm going to play it a little more and then hopefully watch and see what happens in the community and get some more patches. There's a huge list of patches that people, there's actually a Reddit subgroup on this, and the Maxis people are watching, and it's become a really developed bug tracker which is unfortunate for EA's QA service, or doesn't really say much for them. And then the regional thing. So the regional thing, you know, Mark was talking about playing a single player. And right, you have this thing of like, you build this city and you get the city up to say 15, 20,000. And now you're like, oh, you know, I could use another city to support this. And then you go away from your 20,000 person city and you start working on your new city. Well, while you're working on your new city, nothing's happening in your main city. So you have this disconnect where you just can't be in two places at one time, right? So you think, oh, if I was playing multiplayer, that would solve that. Well, it solves it at the time that you're all playing it at the same time. But what happens when some people keep playing and other people don't? Or some people play at a really high rate of pace and others don't? Well, you wind up with regions where you've got one city that's got like 150,000 people, and then you've got a 12,000 person city right outside it. And if you try and start a city in that region, the demand curves are all kinds of messed up.
Oh, no.
So I tried to start a city inside a region that already had a couple of big cities. And what happened was I could never do anything really other than build residential, because there was so much high demand for residential from the other cities that were at the bursting point that I couldn't get demand going for anything else.
Oh, boy.
So how about this? I will go back to SimCity when you are online, when you get it running.
Yeah.
We should get a region, the three of us, and then revisit this in maybe 6 weeks' time.
Okay.
And
I'm
have
down
a
for
grand
that.
Experiment as to how messed up it is.
I'm down for that.
And if it improves, they patch it, if they start to expand the stuff, give us more options, make people smarter, then I will come back to it because I love my SimCity. But right now, I am more interested in going back and playing SimCity 2000.
You know what's interesting to me is reading our forum and how many people were saying that Tropico, Tropico game, is what we all wished this new SimCity was. I didn't play that. Have you, any of you played that?
I haven't played Tropico since Tropico 2. But
neither have I.
I played Tropico 3 and I thought it was great because it ran on my old ass laptop really well and I had a barrel of laughs with it, but I haven't played Tropico 4 yet.
Yeah, maybe we should check that out because I saw that on like one of the crazy Steam sales recently too, and it was like really low priced and I completely ignored
well,
that
I said
series
it before.
After
I wanted
a while.
I wanted to scratch this itch with Anno 2070, but between the fact that it was always $60 and I couldn't find it, well, I missed a couple of Steam sales on it and the backlash over the Ubisoft DRM, I just never broke down and bought it.
Get Settlers. Let's go back to Settlers.
Settlers is actually really good.
I PR'd the launch of Settlers 3 in the UK.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was
Blue Byte did some good stuff.
I was playing that on iOS for a while. They put out an iOS version. Yeah. And I was playing that. It was kind of fun.
All right, before we leave SimCity, I want to editorialize just a moment about customer service, because as many of you know, a little over, a long time ago now, I worked for Electronics Boutique, which was
it's a long time ago because that store doesn't exist.
Never heard of it.
You ever heard of Electronics Boutique?
Nope.
What about Babbage's?
Yeah, Babbage's.
It was like,
no,
never heard of that either?
We did this.
It's not a nonsense word. It's not a nonsense word.
All right, let's try this. Circuit City.
No, I know that. Okay. It's like Radio
Shack.
The
good guys? The good guys? You know the good guys? They gotta be good.
Anyway.
They're like Pep Boys?
Kind of, actually. They had the same freaking symbol.
I just want to say a little something about customer service and how Electronic Arts' response to SimCity's issues illustrates how far the game publisher world needs to evolve in customer service in an environment that games become services. Games becoming services means that your customer service is a huge, important part of your business, and they ultimately sort of kind of brute forced the customer service here a little bit, but they dropped the ball in so many ways. And I'm just going to lay it out real quick. Lucy Bradshaw, SVP for Maxis and SVP for EA in charge of Maxis, issued the first statement about the woes of SimCity on Friday night after everybody had gone. So there was no way that anyone could comment or pick up the conversation. So that's faux pas number one. But even worse was what she said. What she said, never, the very first thing you know about customer service, if you've ever been taught good customer service, is people, especially Americans, love to forgive. The only way you get to be forgiven is if you say, I'm sorry. So far, Electronic Arts, in their arrogance, has not said, I'm sorry. How hard is it just to say, you know what, guys, we're sorry? And you know what? You have a huge cadre of SimCity fans who would love to say, you know what? We understand. Like, you're forgiven. We just want the game to be great. We'll stick by you. They came out and look, Lucy even said, well, this was really dumb. Like, she talked them down. She made them look bad, but didn't apologize. How utterly nonsensical. And then Then the big censure. Instead of saying, I'm sorry, well, you know what we're going to do because we're really sympathizing with you? We're going to give you a free game. You know what? No one asked for a goddamn free game. No one really wants a free game. And especially if they're mad at you about their service, why would they want another damn game? What they really wanted was to hear, I'm sorry, we're going to make it better for you. And yet EA clung to this. And on top of that, and they just did so many things not right here. On top of that, she closes it by telling people what a great game SimCity is. Well, no, it's not a great game. Look, the place to grandstand your game is not when you're trying to talk to your consumer after a clusterfuck. The time to grandstand your game is not when you're saying...
before the clusterfuck.
Is not in the same missive where you tell people we did things dumb. You don't say we did things dumb and we weren't right in this, but SimCity's a great game. No, what you do is you say, hey, we're really sorry. We are doing everything we can to make this better. And then... yeah, you know what? It's against your policy. You offer a refund. And you know why you offer a refund? Because not very many people are actually going to take you up on it. And the ones who do, a good portion of them are going to come back. But on top of all that, you'd like to sell people games from Origin in the next decade and setting a precedent of no matter what, no matter how bad we screw up, we're not going to ever honor our purchases. We're never going to treat you like a good customer. Is just a slap in the face. It's going to live with them for a long time.
Do you want to add the insult to injury that if, you know, oh, you do want a refund and we're not going to give you one, you do a chargeback on your credit card, we will ban your Origin account so you lose all the games you bought from us in the past. I mean, EA have basically, you know, I've said this before, EA is spending so much time trying to catch up to Activision to be the number one again. They're forgetting that the only people who can put them there are the consumers.
Are the customers, are the gamers. And you don't try to say, you don't, good customer service doesn't try to save face. Good customer service takes care of the customer and takes care of them and treats them with respect. And then you save face by virtue of that. You save face because you did the right thing, not because you tried to spin it the right way. And then the two more misses over the weekend, they're more of like, we're adding servers, we're doing all this. Say I'm sorry. Offer a refund, and you never even had to give away a free game. No one, other than a few vocal people who want something free, of which there are always people out there, no one wants a free game out of you because you messed up. What they really want is they want the game they paid for.
Give them some free DLC later down the line.
Exactly.
And not only that, there's a lot of germs in this town, and we want a hospital here. So please, somebody put a hospital in our town and fire services. Could you please install that?
Can the hospital have signs? Because I clearly can't find the hospital.
But bigger picture.
Garnett and Marcus are moving into SimCity.
Bigger picture. It really does speak volumes to how much sophistication and evolution customer service is going to have from publishers. Because when you were just selling a box on a shelf and you were removed really from the customer relationship aspect of your business, it wasn't as big a deal. But in this sort of environment, as I think Blizzard probably very well knows from their experience launching online games, you've got to be more adept than that. You have to be on top of it.
Won't the community forget? Like, in a few months from now, aren't we just going to be caring and bitching about something else?
I think the community's, I'm sorry to jump in, I think the community in particular has the knives out for Electronic Arts right now.
Yeah, well, Origin Arts, especially.
Well, just Origin, but Electronic Arts in particular, all they have done with their attitudes, microtransactions, the, Peter Moore's going after, so instead of Peter Moore coming out and saying, let's focus on getting SimCity fixed, he's bitching and moaning at a website for a Dead Space 3 story.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you haven't got anything better to do? I mean, you're a passionate man. You're a knowledgeable man. Why aren't you banging heads together? Why aren't you saying, what is our crisis PR? Because I got to say, this crisis PR for EA, without a doubt, the worst crisis public relations program
really
I've ever seen put together. And this is right up there now. I mean, beyond Duke Nukem Forever, this is the worst video game launch in living memory, in my opinion. It basically makes E.T. on the Atari look like, you know, Game of the Year material.
Daikatana and Battlecruiser notwithstanding.
Well, seriously, I mean, if you'd have brought those games out into this environment, they would have been crucified. But the problem is that everybody else has moved with the times.
Yeah.
But Electronic Arts is not. They're stuck in PR plans from 10 years ago.
We literally have, in the span of 4 seconds, a Daikatana reference, E.T. on an Atari 2600. You guys, get off my lawn! Get off my lawn! No, I appreciate
it. If you're in my SimCity, you don't have any lawns. Just tower blocks no everywhere. Lawns.
You're right, though. And you know what? Peter Moore can do it. He should be... EA needs a face of the customer, a face of the gamer advocate who's out there saying, you know what? We really fucked this up, and I'm really sorry, and we're going to make it right. Not it's a great game, guys. Don't worry. It's going to be right. Don't worry. I mean, all of a sudden, I'm sorry, because it's so natural to say I'm sorry, but they've like just staunchly refused to do that. Yeah. It's as if they are so concerned about showing any sort of crack in the armor that they are just crumbling behind it.
Have you seen that South Park sketch where BP apologizes?
Sorry.
Sorry, guys. They're petting the seals.
Yeah.
I think they need that.
All right. We got to go to break.
Mr. on the time count there. Like, I don't know. We're way over. Whatever.
I'm bringing in baby seals.
At this point, we're being redundant.
Sorry to have gotten run away. We will be right back.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game. But what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right. I will take some of my own medicine and say, I'm sorry. Got a little wound up there.
Hey, Nicole, which one of them do you want to hug?
Can we do a group hug?
We'll do a group hug. We'll
I think everyone will feel best that way.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
I'm not.
I'm sorry for being all
ranty. You still get a hug.
No, you made very valid points, and I applaud you for taking such a firm stand, both of you. I mean, it's the truth. It's the truth. A lot of it is very much justified. So
it only gets to me because I know how fixable stuff like this is. And like, anyway, let's move on to something that's nice, really awesome, like Tomb Raider.
Dude, it is awesome.
It is awesome. I agree. I am here to tell you that I think this Tomb Raider game is awesome. I have other complaints with it, but I think the game is awesome.
For my money, it's the best game I've played this year.
Well, I mean,
it's March.
Sitting here on March 15th, that's not really the biggest leap in the world.
It's in my top two.
What's the other one?
Ni No Kuni.
Oh, yeah, I like Ni No Kuni a lot. I think this Tomb Raider is Crystal Dynamics just knocked it out of the park. It is exactly what the character needed. It brought the character back to
the part I don't agree with.
Back to the forefront of being a top tier iconic video game character. It revitalized. It's exactly what you need to do with these sort of reboot kind of things. It revitalized. It took what was awesome about Tomb Raider and injected it with a brand new energy. It got to the core of who Lara was. I loved it.
It did?
I think so,
What is the core of who Lara is?
Well, I think that's what the whole game is examining. Like that woman's journey into becoming a superhero.
This is the Lara. This is the Lara pre Tomb Raider, the very first ever Tomb Raider.
This is
Raider
Batman
game.
Begins for Tomb Raider.
Oh. Yeah, and I think that, you know, and I'm with Jeff on this one.
God damn it, I wanted to talk about the parts that I liked first.
Well, we're talking about the parts that I like.
Yeah.
So,
and me.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, one of the things you do get as you progress through the game is you see Lara going from this nervous, you know, this overwhelmed character who actually professes a kind of hatred for tombs and for archaeology and being kind of over it all to as she go, you watch those the first couple of cutscenes again on the boat. and then watch
She says the line, "I hate tombs," at the beginning.
Which is ridiculous because she's on this adventure as the real archaeologist behind the stooge.
Well, but that's what's so brilliant about it. That she... from a character's perspective, she doesn't understand the reality of what she's getting herself into. It's a video game with an actual character arc, which never happens.
Wow, I could not disagree with you. I literally could not disagree with you more. I wrote down here, paper-thin Lara equals awesome. She is the most paper-thin, characterless character I've ever seen.
What?
She's...
I was going to come in here and applaud Rihanna Pratchett, who wrote the game, and I think this has it is the first game that I can think of, unless you guys can correct me, where the character that I start playing is fundamentally different than the character I finish playing. Like, she grows in the game. She grows into herself.
You sound like a PR mouthpiece. Doesn't grow. She shoots a fucking deer with an arrow, and 5 minutes later she's gunning dudes down like she's been doing it all her life. It's fucking bullshit.
You guys should fight.
I can't believe this. The whole, like, she goes on a journey. She goes on no journey. Literally 10 minutes of game time after she kills her first deer, she's using her bow and arrow to stick arrows in the backs of dudes' heads repeatedly.
Okay.
That's not a journey.
It's a video game, number one. Number two, the journey isn't about skill acquisition. The journey is about perspective. And I would argue that her perspective evolves over the course of the game. And if you pay attention to what she thinks and what she says and how brilliantly they use those journal entries every time she – not every time, but periodically when she sits at a campfire.
If you stop and listen to them.
No, but what's so brilliant is you don't have to stop and listen to them.
You don't stop and read and
no, I listen.
Read
no,
what's so brilliant about it is that you're navigating menus anyway, and it gives you something to do while you're navigating the menus. It's such a wonderful piece of design.
I agree.
Brilliant
design pieces
throughout this game.
I agree with that 100%.
I
agree with that 100%.
This is the Lara who, as he said, is the archaeologist behind the mouthpiece professor who's there for the coverage or whatever. She's the advisor.
He's a tool.
He is a tool.
He's an utter tool. By the way,
that's the fucking character.
But that's the idea. He's the tool. She's supposed to be the brains. She's obviously disillusioned with it all.
The guy in the white suit in Indiana and Raiders of the Lost Ark is a tool also. That's the fucking archetype. Go ahead.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah.
Can't remember his name.
Hillock?
Yeah.
Belloc. Nerd points
for save.
That. Thank you. The guy who actually played that character also had a part in a British soap opera called Crossroads, which was about a motel, which was really cheesy. Interesting aside.
Weird.
Anyway, she's disillusioned. You know, her dad was the famous archaeologist and imbued all this stuff into her. She had this passion initially. The passion's fading. And now she, you know, there's the shipwreck. She ends up on the island. She does what she needs to do and discovers this strength as she goes along and starts to really get, you know, as she finds these little trinkets, not even the tombs that you raid, the little trinkets, like the little dolls. And, you know, you can see it's touching her. You can see it's getting her back into giving a shit and marveling at the tomb side of it. Yeah. Is the tomb side of it practically non-existent? Well, we'll cover that in a minute. But then she does what she needs to do, and she shows that she's looking after her friends. She's faithful to her friends. She is the strong one. She is becoming the strong Lara Croft, who in all the other video games that follow is the queen of butt kickery.
It's a brilliant action game. It's a brilliant action game. I do not disagree with that at all. I find aside from the fact that it's a cover-based shooter and there's no cover mechanic, which is kind of annoying.
What? What do you mean? Every time you get behind something, she automatically ducks down behind it. I found
right,
all those
little
touches.
Right, but you can't lean around a corner.
Yes, you can in Zoom.
Every time I do, I get shot.
Well, that's because you probably need to be quicker on the draw.
No, I mean, every time I do,
dude,
I come out.
I love that in this game, I don't need to worry about pulling out my gun. I don't need to worry about crouching when I need to crouch. The game knows when I need to do that.
I don't need to be glued to something.
I don't need to be glued to anything. When Lara pulls out her weapon, I know there's bad guys around. That's a wonderful contextual indication to me as the player that it's about to be combat time or stealth. She goes into stealth automatically. I don't have to push the freaking
button.
You
like that?
I loved it.
Huh, okay.
I love the fact that if I'm...
There's no suspense there.
And
what?
You're not playing.
You don't know where the guys are or how to deal with them.
Are you telling me when you're basically you come through the little the crevasse into like the wide open forest with the lake and the waterfall in the corner and there's the huts. Are you telling me that when she pulls that out and it's dark and you can hear the flash, you see the flashlights in the distance, you hear the voices, that isn't suspenseful for you because you know your first time in this area, you don't know how big it is, you don't know what else is going on there, you know that there is 20 or 30 guys.
And how brilliant is that level design too, where you can sort of become Batman for a little bit and start going up.
But you become
trees.
Batman a lot.
Yeah. But that's fucking awesome! Why is that something that you would say in a negative way?
Hold on. Scanning. Scan clear. Scanning. Scan clear. Scanning. Scan clear.
Oh my god, you are trolling like a motherfucker. I cannot believe it.
I'm telling you that they took Lara's name and slapped it on a really good Uncharted clone.
Dude, I think they do so many things better than Uncharted does. They do combat far better than Uncharted does. The dynamic
camera is a stretch.
I think the combat outstrips Uncharted.
The gunplay or the melee?
All of it.
Okay.
I'd say the gunplay is actually very, very satisfying.
The gunplay is satisfying. I agree.
The
gunplay is satisfying.
The weaponry with
the bow is super satisfying.
They do puzzles better than Uncharted. They do...
Where are the puzzles?
Those tomb raids.
Oh, my God.
I would actually side on the Uncharted side for the puzzles.
Really?
Because I think the puzzles are not the most shining moment. And that's where it's kind of disingenuous that this is Tomb Raider because of the tomb raiding element being kind of
I think
lame.
In Uncharted, I feel like the puzzles, while I liked this about it, the puzzle is look in my journal and then apply what I see in my journal to the scene.
They
which
fall
is a
back
fun
on that
thing.
Quite a bit.
It's a fun thing in a storytelling perspective. It's very Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. But what I liked about Tomb Raider is I walk into a thing, there's no guidebook. There's just deal with the physics and figure it out. It's much more like this game is much more like Zelda.
Did you play Legend Anniversary?
Yes.
Underworld?
Yes. And I raved about it at the time.
Those were awesome games.
But you know what? The thing that's
those were Tomb Raider games.
Well, Tomb Raider. Well, I think you're clinging on to this idea of Tomb Raider.
I'm not clinging. I'm saying that was what made Tomb Raider Tomb Raider.
Well, to you. And I'm saying that I think those Tomb Raider games grew out of a legacy of platformers. Tomb Raider, the original Tomb Raider, was a platformer game with guns. Okay, but so is Super Mario World, in a sense. What I'm saying is this game deconstructed all of that and allowed you to still have these amazing moving through the level, how you get around.
I agree. I think that's really interesting, too.
But reconstructed the experience of playing as Lara into a much more modern, much more interesting, much more character-focused game. And yes, it's cobbled together from other influences. You can see the influence of Uncharted. You can see the influence of God of War.
How is it more character-focused?
Because it's about throwing this character onto an island and saying, how does she survive? And what happens to her?
Not only that, how does she get her friends to survive?
Right.
I mean, it shows.
But they don't care about her friends. Her friends are briefly introduced on the ship, and you run into them every so often, but you have very little communication with them. The character, I disagree with you guys on all of this. I think the characters are paper thin. I think that they're not interesting. I think that most of them are just really, like, throwaway stereotypes that I could not give two shits about.
I don't think the Lara character is paper thin, or is she throwaway? The other ones, yes, there are stereotypes. Oh, look, he's a Scottish guy. He's a wise old sea dog.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, yes, there are some characters in there that are not. They don't have the depth of, you know.
I'll concede that as well, but it didn't detract from. I mean, you do only run into him a few times, and as such, they're there as people that you need to rescue.
Think about the experience you have with Scully and Chloe and in an Uncharted game, the times that you spend with those characters interacting with each other. I get it. This is a solitary adventure for Lara, but by virtue of it being a solitary adventure for Lara, we can't also ascribe it all these great, look at how great the story is and all these characters that are building up with them because they're not there.
I will agree with you in that sense that Uncharted handles its its rogues gallery, its side characters in a much stronger way than Tomb Raider.
And I think
here.
That Rogues Gallery really strengthens Drake because it gives you a mirror, a foil against which to get those characterizations of Nathan without them being, hi, I'm Nathan, I'm doing this.
But Drake starts, even in the third game where you get to see him as a kid, he starts as a superhero and he ends as a superhero. And there's not really much of him realizing anything about himself.
They're both ridiculous murder simulators, if you're going to boil it down like that.
Well, that's a completely side issue. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about. And I agree with you, but that's not the issue we're talking about. We're talking about in the context of what happens to the character over the course of the game. I felt more attached to I keep calling her Laura and everybody hates me.
Laura's
experience.
Laura, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you. I'll have you say it. We can just drop that in every time I want to say it.
Oh, come on. He doesn't even say Beta anymore.
He doesn't. I noticed that too.
I will in 2 weeks. I'll come back sound like Tom Jones on crank.
I felt more connected, more inside, more. I related more to her experience than I ever did to Drake. Drake, I was watching an awesome Indiana Jones film and I loved it.
I agree.
But the dynamic camera, which does so much to add mood and set tone,
If you switch gears into design stuff, I think that the design...
It goes hand in hand.
Did you want to protect her?
Well, I mean...
She didn't need any protection.
She don't need
And that's the problem is, for me, it doesn't go hand in hand. I think that the game as a game is fantastic. I find myself playing the game and enjoying the hell out of it. And I have no problem saying, I love playing this game. I'm having a blast with it. I'm having a ton of fun, you know, using all the different tools that it puts at my disposal, the different melee combat options, the bow, the weapons, all that kind of stuff. But I cannot turn around and say that to me, it's a reboot of Lara Croft that makes me happy. I wanted Dark Knight Rises. Like, if you're going to do a reboot of a big character like that, then give me Dark Knight Rises. But this is a farce.
The primary aspect of the Tomb Raider game was to get Lara and her friends to survive and get off the island. It wasn't to go and find a bunch of treasures. Initially, they were looking to go to the Dragon's Triangle and find, you know, these treasures and everything. But that became quickly a side issue or non-issue because it's all about the survival. What this has done as a reboot is prepped everybody for the, you know, if Crystal Dynamics come back to us in 2 years' time and give us, you know, Lara Croft Tomb Raider 2 or whatever they're going to call it, and we are back, you know, it's basically a carbon copy of 1, you have my permission to go absolutely batshit bananas on these guys every day that, you know, I will call you up and record voicemail messages and tweet them from you abusing these guys, and I'll be right with you because
they did that with the anniversary. It was beautiful.
Well, now they're rebooting
it.
They do
this wonderful thing, like that wonderful fan service moment at the end of the game. I feel like that really, and I won't spoil it, but I feel like that really sets up, like, the next game is going to be different.
I'm going to be really irritated with the fan service moment, aren't I?
You probably will, because you seem to be irritated by all of it.
I don't think they've earned it at all.
Dude.
So it's called Tomb Raider, and the eponymous tomb raiding has to be given to me at the end of it with tomb raided exclamation point on the screen after I solve one lousy, shitty physics puzzle. It's like, here's your tomb,
but
boy.
There's a bunch of
Get out of here. Hope you enjoyed it.
There's a bunch of those.
A bunch?
Yeah, there's 6 or 7 of them at least, right?
There are a bunch. And some of them are actually really quite tricky.
I wouldn't quantify a bunch as 6 or 7 in a game called Tomb Raiding.
I will say that
Tomb Raider.
You're not wrong. It's not a Tomb Raider game as we knew it to be a Tomb Raider game, in that the focus isn't the archaeological exploration and solving all the puzzles and dangling and then
during the course of the main storyline, does she not raid the tomb on the island and figure out the major mystery surrounding that tomb?
But it's not got the no matter how cinematic and cool that ending was and the final battle and, you know, how just enjoyable the game is in general, it's not a Tomb Raider game as we knew it. I mean, basically,
but that's what's good about it. Like, those games were dated. That style is dated.
Wait, hold on. Why were they dated? I don't buy into this. Like, everyone's just, oh, Tomb Raider was dated. No, it wasn't. Being a good exploration game is awesome. Making a good exploration game is really hard. I was having this debate with my friend Kynan online. Like, look, I get it. What they've done is super sophisticated, but going back to what Tomb Raider did, it's really hard to make a game where you spend your time finding ancient ruins with weird, mysterious things to do in it and altering the landscape and keeping a player interested without having them just ducking behind cover and shooting shit.
But those last games, and I,
you can go back and watch TRS episodes where we reviewed them. I raved about those games. I enjoyed the hell out of them, and I still do. This doesn't diminish those games, but the fact that it was Lara Croft as the main character in those games was completely irrelevant. She was completely replaceable.
Why?
She's just this James Bond-esque character that...
Look, she became a walking cliche. She became a walking pair of breasts.
Yes. And
Go look at the character model in this game. She still is well over a C cup. She's ridiculous. By the way, we don't talk about that.
I like how very specific. We don't need to debate
her
size.
She's well over any sort of normal boob size, and she's wearing a fucking spaghetti strap tank top in all kinds of climate, including a goddamn snow-swept mountaintop. It's ridiculous.
Well, they don't
have a Patagonia in the middle of it.
Kills a billion and one people. I was pretty sure if you're freezing your fucking tits off, you grab a jacket off one of the dead dudes and put it on.
Hey,
that's what you're gonna complain about, really? You're really gonna
tell me that they're not sexualizing her? They're totally still playing the same game.
Did anyone say they're not sexual? What we were saying,
I said the boobs weren't as big. So hang on. You know what I like in this too? I like in this Lara Croft to John McClane in Die Hard.
Yeah.
Okay.
There not only visually where it's like, yes, same clothes.
John McClane has fantastic breasts.
He does. Sorry, let's just pause for a second and think about those. Anyway, so yeah, not only do you have the costume that is the wife beater that does get grubby and, you know, kind of torn or whatever, and there's a bra underneath, but I mean, everything's kind of battened down. I mean, there's no enhanced mega jiggle that they've put in there before. She's an athletic girl with a positive body image as far as I'm concerned.
Crystal D had already done that. Crystal D did not make... We're all remembering Core's crappy, jiggly boob.
This is the wrong conversation to be having. I don't think this is the conversation
now
we want.
Now I'm paying attention.
Well, Nicole's involved.
This version of Tomb Raider is not the Lara Croft that we all know and started off with on the PS1. This is Lara Croft evolving from disillusioned, kind of getting hosed by everything, you know, working for a douchebag who's basically got a microphone, and then evolving into the badass motherfucker.
Let me just make an analogy that I hope helps. There's a hell of a lot of awesome first-person shooters, but there's something about Master Chief at the center of a story and the way they focus, especially in Halo 4 and 3, how focused it is on Master Chief as and elevates him as this iconic character that makes those games feel special. In the last few Tomb Raiders, none of that was the case with Lara. In this game, the focus is on the character again. It elevates her. It centers around her and her experience in a way that she deserves her iconic status again. I loved those most recent Tomb Raider games, but they're just avatar climbing things, finding things. It's a platformer that you could swap out any character model and it doesn't matter. Here, we finally kind of dig a little deeper into what experience this woman is having trying to come to terms with what's happening around her. And that's exciting.
Diametrically opposed to you, I think it's just the opposite. The focus in this game is the combat. It doesn't matter who is behind the shotgun, machine gun, pistol, bow. It could be any old Tom, Dick, or Harry. And instead it says Lara Croft, and we're supposed to go, oh, now I get it. She's a rich character because she can run around and kill a bunch of fucking guys.
Boy, I so disagree. The number and variety of animations that they give to that character model that are constantly giving
are awesome.
They're constantly giving you clues as to her state of being, her feeling at the moment. The fact that when I come around a corner, I don't come around a corner like a video game character. She places her hands on the wall sometimes. Sometimes she doesn't. If we're walking through water, sometimes she moves the water out of the way. All those things. Sometimes she'll limp in a different way.
If I had taken this degree of valuable tech and animation and made it exploration-centric game instead of a combat-centric game, I could have made Tomb Raider.
Do you not think that there's exploration in this game?
There's exploration as in I'm moving through a level that I need to know how it's laid out so I can shoot the guys when they come at me.
They're great combat environments. I almost think you're just fucking with me.
I'm not fucking with you at all.
Because just to rile me up, because there are the number and variety and appropriateness of the collectibles in each area is so exciting to me, and how it's not like a video game collectible. It's not just a
Jeff Cannata.
In some levels, you're looking for flora and fauna of that level. In other levels, you're looking for,
GPS caches, relics, and papers. Every
sometimes you have
level.
To like burn flags, and other times you have to like find markings of the bat. And they're specific to the level that you're
there's in. There's one add-on for each level, right?
But that's awesome, and then it adds to exploration. Like you can move through the game and play it like a third-person shooter. And that's fine, and it's really fun, and it's way more fun to play it like that than it would be an Uncharted game playing it like that. But there's also the level of figuring out, how am I going to get up there? How do I get up there? And the levels are so huge and open.
And lay back on top of themselves in really cool ways. And you find out after you've been up the side of the hill, you come back down the other side. Wait, oh, wait, I'm over that area I was in before. It's really awesome. I agree.
It's
I
like
agree
Zelda.
With all this.
It's like Zelda. And every weapon upgrade you get helps you in two different ways. It make something that you were able to do already easier, which is awesome, and it opens up more areas of the map to you, which is a very Zelda way of handling
it. That's the sort of bet. I'm not sure I completely love what. So what he's talking about is that as you're going through the game, you very quickly early on realize that there are obstacles in your way that you can't break right now, but you will get the tool to break them later on, which is to encourage you to go back and play through those sections of the game over again,
which I've done. I finished on 69%, and I've gone back so far. I'm back up,
which is very video gamey, and I mean that's fine. It's obviously something like it's a very Metroidy sorry that you
yeah,
go back and go
a
back.
15 hour game, and to add that replayability, that aspect
so
to go back. What's wrong with
it?
That?
I'm Would not. I'm not. I guess if I sound dismissive, it's just that I'm like okay, but like I'm there for the story and the story progression, and
so this added layer is.
It's fine.
Offensive to you because you're only there for the.
Would you rather
first
they
why,
attacked on
why are you ascribing me offense? I'm not offended
like,
by it at all.
They did
because that's not offensive. I'm just saying poofed because it just.
I'm saying poofed.
I mean, it's not offensive to me. It just doesn't. That doesn't resonate for me because I don't have any reason that I want to go back to her first base camp because I already had my base camp experience. I already had that experience of this is the first time I've ever been here. Oh shit! I got to kill this deer. I don't want to go back now and go. Oh well, now I can use my X to break down this. Barrier Y and get to that other collectible I couldn't before.
Yeah, but there are, I mean, on the subject of collectibles, there are some tombs that, you know, until you've really powered up, you can't tackle some of the tombs.
True.
Which is, you know, that's just a challenge in itself. I would basically like to say that Tomb Raider is a bloody awesome game. I think it's one of the most fun games I've had.
Yeah.
Similarities with Far Cry 3 are kind of uncanny because there's another character who goes from being a total wimp into Rambo inside the you know, gutting a chicken. but I think it bodes well, and I'm actually genuinely excited to see what Crystal Dynamics are going to do with the next gen consoles.
Yeah.
To add and you know and this current tech and this character just to add the things that we want to see make. Lara, the bona fide Tomb Raider. I think as a reboot, it serves its purpose phenomenally well, and it's another reboot that it was as much fun for me as Devil May Cry.
Well, okay, first of all, I want to apologize for not playing the game.
Oh, wait.
I didn't really
hey, guys,
contribute
Nicole's
to this
still
conversation
here.
At all. but so, taking into consideration that I have a smaller budget, I'm going to get Gears and BioShock Infinite. Is this a game that I should play?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, without doubt.
Okay.
I think this will prove to be one of the best games of the year.
Okay. All right.
It's an amazingly well-made and not, I should say made is the wrong way. It's an amazingly well-crafted experience.
That is the key point. And we
it's
will high-five over
game.
That. The way that they masterfully convey information to you is a lesson that more video game designers need to learn. The way that, and especially in contrast to Uncharted sort of glowy next area, the way that they are more subtle, it is, you know, white is sort of a subtle indicator of what can be climbable.
How about this? It's the best. I didn't realize it didn't have a HUD until I thought about it and realized it didn't have a HUD game that I've ever played.
Yes.
Even more so than Dead Space. Even more so because there's nothing artificial here. I mean, it is an amazing, engrossing experience because there's no HUD and there's no feeling of I missed this. Where's my HUD?
Because
they designed it so well.
The next level that I'm hoping this next generation of games cracks, because I'm so ready for it, is to finally get to the point where we can do all the things that this game does, but we don't ever need to have a blue X come up on my screen.
Oh yeah, the loading.
Well, no, I'm not even. I'm saying
press X
to
flex.
Press X to do this or press Y.
Oh,
you know, and this game does the awesome sort of Heavy Rain-esque, like placing it into the world in a really interesting way, and I appreciate
sometimes.
That. Well, but I want to get to the point where the game systems communicate to me what the correlation between the button and my character is.
Yeah.
And then when the time comes, I just instinctively know which button would be needed.
I agree.
Rather than having the indicator come up.
And conversely, can we come to an agreement that arbitrary button tapping QTEs should be a thing of the past?
Yes.
They should be made illegal.
Yeah, they're just...
But can we also say that, and I think that Square Enix, in particular with their Western stuff out of Eidos Montreal, over the last several months, I mean, I liked Hitman, I really liked Sleeping Dogs, and I
want to
really
play both
love,
those games.
Yeah, I love Tomb Raider, and I got to say, Square Enix to me is producing some phenomenal Western-based games, while they're...
Eidos. Those are all Eidos.
Yeah, yeah. But still, I mean, those...
I know it's Square Enix, but I mean, they're under their
and
Eidos
we've got Thief coming.
Flag.
We know Thief is on the way as well, and I got to say that their Western stuff is far outshining their Eastern stuff right now.
And man, I also played this on the PC, and it is gorgeous.
Oh, it's
gorgeous,
dribblingly beautiful.
Yeah,
dude, it's gorgeous on 360.
I didn't check it out on 360, but
you can see the underwire in Laura's bra,
which is ridiculous because you wouldn't wear underwire on a journey. You'd wear a sports bra, let's be honest.
Well, don't
realism, eh?
Saying
the weapon upgrades,
I contributed
all look
something.
Awesome. Everything looks awesome. Yeah, thanks for the bra commentary. With Nicole.
And I was joking about that bra thing, by the way. You can't see anything I've looked,
of course. You have. How about that multiplayer? Did you play any? I want to hear about it. If you have, have you played any multiplayer?
I refuse to play multiplayer on games like Uncharted and Tomb Raider. Just
Uncharted
on principle,
multiplayer is fun. I didn't play
Uncharted
Raider,
multiplayer
but...
was fun. I didn't play it much either, but it was fun.
I didn't play it, but I acknowledge it was fun.
No, I played a fair amount of Uncharted multiplayer. It was fun, but I haven't tried Tomb Raiders.
I didn't play it, but I acknowledge it was there.
I eagerly await being once again crucified for my opinion, but that's fine. I'm sticking by it. I mean, I knew it was going to be controversial because I do love the game, but I don't love it. I love the game if it weren't a Tomb Raider game. Because, and you know what? I want to come back on the other side. I want to ask you a question that this will bring... So bring Nicole in because we can change the subject to talking about it in generalizations. I'll pose this question and then you can think about it. So my friend Kynan, who works at 343 on Halo, and just finished Binary Slayer mode for Halo 4, which apparently is getting a really good initial reaction from the community. So if you're playing Halo 4 and haven't been online in a while, you might want to try out Binary Slayer.
And I want you to listen to his question and keep in mind, he created a mode called Binary Slayer. Proceed.
He said to me over Twitter, he says, I wonder when we'll get a game like Tomb Raider where you only kill a reasonable number of people, 3 to 5 max, or maybe even none.
Binary Slayer.
All right, we'll be right back with the second half. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up to the minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. Okay, so that is a question that we have obviously addressed before, this whole thing of the number of killings that happen in any game. Shooter, something that we talked with Corey about from Jaeger, designer on Spec Ops. We've talked about it before with regard to Drake a number of times in Uncharted, since you know he's supposed to be this freewheeling cavalier guy who, by the way, just rolls through shooting down 1,000,001 people, and now Lara.
And especially in Uncharted 3, where, I guess this is a minor spoiler, but someone dies, and... it's a big deal to Drake, and it's like, well, you've just been watching mass murder. It's a cognitive dissonance thing.
Yes. And so Tomb Raider again brings this point back up, and the point that it points to, that's really well spoken. The issue that it, you know, puts the focus on is that we still are very much in a world of interacting with our games through guns and violence. And I think it is really a open question of, can you make a game? Can you make a Tomb Raider? Look, even Tomb Raider, I'm not holding any disillusions here. There's a reason Lara held two pistols and ran around shooting things all over the place. I mean, even in Tomb Raider, there was still ample amounts of killing. It's because we just haven't figured out how to make a game that is about, you know, the exploration and investigation that stands on its own. Yeah.
Can I interject two titles? First title is Dishonored. Where there is...
I played it that way.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, it's very challenging.
Well, there's a reason it's the hardest way to play it, because it goes against all our basest natures as video game players who like to blow stuff up.
I wish Ariel was here, because she had a good argument with me about that, because she was really put off by that, because she wanted to have, as she looked at it, I hope I'm not misstating her argument too much, she wanted to have fun with the game, quote unquote, and to her having, it was so much of a struggle and fight to not be killing people, that killing people was the fun way to play the game, but it was bad.
Oh, that's the trade-off, isn't it?
I mean, right.
Just like it's life. It's a daily struggle not to kill people.
It's like ice cream. But
and that's what I said. I was like, that's really cool, and it's actually working.
Well, the other one I would like to throw up there is the Deus Ex.
Well, Metal Gear Solid 4, but right? Couldn't you do that pacifist?
I think the way I interpret the point that he's trying to make is not a game where killing is the central metaphor, and yet there is a way to not kill.
Thank you.
But a game in which, I mean, I found myself playing the beginning of Tomb Raider going, this is an intriguing idea that we've seen numerous times in all kinds of fiction, where you crash land on the island and you have to survive. And if that were to happen to any of us, if it happened to me, I wouldn't kill anybody. I might have to kill some animals to eat, but there is drama, and there are skills, and there are things that you would have to do on that island that are fun fantasy elements of, like, how would I survive in this situation, that you could translate into an action game that don't involve having to murder humans. And I think that there's a game there, and just nobody's making it.
Like, press X to talk it out.
And not only is no one making it, but how would you make it to where it would still be a game that people could sit down and play and have fun with?
Well, I think, you know, you're basically talking about almost Castaway, the video game.
Yeah.
Which I think could be, I mean, so, you know, especially for those of us who adore the SimCities of this world, that whole, you know, being on an island, scavenging for resources, that RPG element, if you will, of just, you know, getting all your stuff together, learning to fish, fashioning a spear. That sort of stuff is fun and cool. And I think there's a way to do it that you could be, you know, like I said, it could be Castaway, where you are, you know, you have to get a fire together, you have to learn how to make all this stuff, and they can pad it out for X amount of hours.
Could you starve the player enough? Could you starve them for interaction enough? I mean, how interesting would it be to get on that and be that castaway and really be so bleakly isolated that when you finally did find any of your fellow castaways, it was really a moment?
I think that would be amazing. I think if you really committed to a game where there aren't NPCs, where it is the environment, and I would say Exhibit A, Minecraft. And I know that that's not exactly appropriate, not a one-to-one comparison, because obviously there's zombies, you can make weapons, yada, yada, yada. But the experience of playing Minecraft, not building in the editor, but hopping into a brand new game of Minecraft is, I'm here, I got nothing, how do I make stuff? And I think if there's a way, that's an exciting thing. People love it, obviously. And I want that game. I'm excited about the game of me versus the environment rather than me versus, you know, the cannibals that live here or whatever it is. I think that's awesome.
And I guess what I did not communicate well was what I loved about old Tomb Raiders was the feeling that at least a chunk of the game was also built around, I love fantasy. I love the idea of, like, stumbling into an ancient Incan ruin that has all of these weird designed contraptions that I have to find ways to deal with. And I remember,
this game has that. It does. Not to the extent that some of the other ones do, perhaps, but it
not on a grand scale. Not where the entire level is built around a series of interlocking different systems that have to go together in order for you to go. I mean, think about that giant.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're going
to
reference.
That was one of their biggest achievements.
One of the most incredible video game levels I remember.
The temple sequence and getting open to where you could actually finally breach the door to get into the lower levels of the temple. That was amazing. And I think that on top of it, it's really hard. I think it's a different set of design skills. But you imagine, like, sitting around in the design workshops while you're trying to figure out, like, what to do in those games. I mean, it's one thing to, like, be sketching out levels where you're, like, putting AI into them and coming up with combat scenarios and all that kind of stuff. But now you're just sitting there kind of blue-skying ideas of, like, so, yeah, another lever? I don't know. Do we put in... And we could put a gear. We've done 25
I
gears.
I thought that
already.
Was really wonderful concept, like the wind concept that they keep coming back to.
The wind concept was kind of cool.
Really smart and fun, and I've never seen that before exactly like that in a game.
And I'm saying in small little chunks they had those pieces, but I'm saying go back to this idea of like creating a big game that's devoid of all that combat. Because here the combat is what keeps the action in this game flowing.
And the action in most games flowing.
And the action, and I think that's what I'm saying.
It's that 30 seconds of fun repeated, and I think it's so scary for designers to not give you something every 30 seconds to deal with that, I mean, but, you know, we used to have that. We used to have the King's Quests of the world and the, you know.
But I think it's also that we are from a different generation.
Yeah, that's true.
Where we are, you know, we are the guys who did play the King's Quests, and we did play those games that were, we thought they were graphically stunning back in the day.
Right.
But
how about this? Nicole, how long would you stick with a game where you were running around a you know, desert island that wound up having some kind of bizarre ruins in it, and you were just exploring and you didn't even really know exactly what you were doing and stumbling upon things and trying to figure out how they go together?
Well, I mean, not very long. I probably wouldn't even pay for that. But I mean, in one
journey,
I was
going
to say, in one sense, it sounds like Journey, and Journey was great, but to me, it wasn't, it was a different kind of exploration because I knew there was so much hype around Journey that I played it because everyone told me to, whereas if you pitched what Journey was, I might not have checked it out. Hmm. But
why?
I don't.
Why is that?
Because it didn't sound.
Because you need to kill stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I need to be entertained. I want to play something.
What about that is not entertaining?
It doesn't sound entertaining to me. When you say in a sentence, float around the sand and interact silently with people, like that doesn't sell me. I mean, I did enjoy it, but that pitch doesn't sell me.
I think it does. I mean, and no, this is no disrespect to you or anybody of your age group. You know, again, I'll go back to the King's Quest thing. I'll even go back before that. Zork.
Yeah.
I mean, the text adventures where we had to use our own imagination. Yeah. And we're kind of...
You had to read.
We had to read,
how many things do you kill in Zork? Not very many. Like two?
Crikey, I can't even remember.
You kill a Gru.
So long.
I believe, right?
I don't know this. Hmm.
Yeah, and a spider?
But then you look at that and you progress all the way through these games and you see them getting graphically better and better. One of the things that I did in Tomb Raider and one of the things I did in Far Cry, because I was running them on PCs and they looked gorgeous, was sometimes I would just stop and admire the view.
Yeah.
I would admire the breeze
I've totally done that in Tomb Raider.
That's one of my favorite things to do in video games. I do that in Terra all the time, too. That's
I bet you've done it in Skyrim.
Oh, yeah. I'm the guy who, remember I told you that story about how the games that let you save your game and do a screenshot, like I frame my save game screenshots. You know,
I do too, but I do love my character.
Some of them are so good, they're practically works of art.
But you frame them and put them on your wall?
No. I mean, when I'm about to save my game, I make sure that the screenshot.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
I frame it like a photographer would.
The clip that goes with it. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So let me throw this out to you. The Far Cry 3 engine. That is the engine of choice. This is that's the video game where the desert island is going to be.
Yep.
You're dropped on a desert island. You have maybe some, you know, a life jacket and some rudimentary supplies that were in a lifeboat. You're the only one left.
Now, I'm liking it so far.
You have to learn how to create something, create a shelter. To create the shelter, you have to get your axe and, you know, chop down trees. How do you do that? You know, find a stone, tie stuff together. You have to figure out how to fish. And then as you progress, and that's the basics, that just getting a fire and, you know, surviving. So, you know, your character has to eat and drink. So you have to source all this stuff. And then beyond that, that's when you start to explore into the island. And that's when you find ruins and you do find perhaps traps or whatever. And then perhaps it's a case of, you know, how do you implement or take some of that tech, some of those traps and help that, you know, to create something to get you off the island.
The time frame there would be my thing.
Well, I mean, when I'm not
15 minute tutorial versus the first 3 hours of building fires.
Well, why is that boring?
That's boring.
I don't understand. Like,
because I don't want to do that. If I want to go outside and build a fire, I'd go build a fire, I guess. Like, when I play games, I want to be this fantastical something rather than living a life that's not mine. I typically don't like the most realistic games.
Hmm.
I don't think they need to be hyper-realistic.
I don't think it needs to be realistic either.
Well, if you look at Assassin's Creed 3, I mean, one of the biggest issues everybody had with that was the 5 hours where you play, you know, before you get to be Connor. And a lot of people are like, oh, it's so dull, it's so boring, blah, blah, blah. Me, I adored it. I thought it was such a great setup. I really just helped build the story in. But I do take your point on board. I mean, you know, spending 2 hours trying to find a bunch of twigs and then, you know, rubbing them together in a certain way, that's going to get really dull and boring. So you do have to pace it so that, you know, yes, within 15 minutes you can perhaps get a rudimentary fire going. But, you know, guess what? Chopping the trees down, or, you know, building a hut, that's going to take a little bit longer, because if you go slapdash, it's going to fall over. So I think there is definitely space for that, especially with the median age of gamers rising.
I need to think about this, because I need to break my argument here out of just a Tomb Raider veneer and think about it in the larger sense of, like, how long, what could one do to create a game in experience that gives a player something that's fun to do and they can do reasonably over and over within the game
that isn't killing.
And that isn't killing.
I think about this all the time.
Tranquilizer darts.
No, see, that's the whole point. No, think of it this way. But think of it this way. Not just
different
it's not
sort of experience, but I'm thinking of like an experience
over
that
and over again. You're doing the, you know, you are doing the same things and progressing.
I want to make a point, because I think that a lot of people hear me say this, because I have before, and think, pussy doesn't want to kill things. And it's not about the killing necessarily. It's about the fact that all that is a giant game of tag. All that is a giant shooting gallery. And it's really reductive to the idea of creating a simulated experience. And I think that what I'm craving is expanding that idea and going, well, I don't have to just play tag with people, whether that's lethal or non-lethal. It's not about the lethality of it. It's about the fact that I point this thing and I pull a trigger. It's when you come right down to it, it's a pretty simplistic thing to be doing in these fantastic technological marvels of worlds that these creators are making. What is more exciting to me is the idea of, you know, I grew up with fucking Star Trek The Next Generation. I want to go in and I want to debate Sherlock Holmes in a fucking computer game. That's, you know, that's the vision of the future that I was instilled with as a child. So.
And I want the explorer journey. I want the like opening the doors to the jewel of the desert and suddenly revealing this ginormous city that looks so amazing. I'm taking that out of Uncharted, but
right. And no, that's an exciting moment. Those are going places and doing things.
I don't want all
things.
The dudes there. I don't want the shooting and killing. Right. I just want the discovery. I want the exploration and then the reward of like figuring out all those things and having just these aha moments that are just like really powerful.
It's time for a new Myst.
Well, that's a great call, because Myst really, for it's time for a Myst that isn't a slideshow.
Right.
Well, Myst in the Far
modern
Cry 3 engine.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's exactly I think what we're talking about is you're in this place that's unfamiliar. You're wandering around. And you're trying to figure it out, piece together clues.
So what it is then to take that a step further is what Myst was doing was Myst always put challenges in front of you that you sort of got an idea of what you needed, but you didn't know where it was or what it was quite yet.
I guarantee you Nicole hates Myst.
Nicole's falling asleep.
Never played
right
Myst.
Now.
No, but you would hate it.
Oh.
Because it requires patience.
I don't have
observation.
A lot of patience. I like observing.
I mean, I'm not trying to insult you. I'm
no,
just saying
okay.
That like I think that what you've the kind of philosophy that you've expressed is that you sort of need that juice.
Right.
Well, didn't we? I mean, again, I'm assuming you're in your early 20s because you are a
mid-20s, guys.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, she could pass for 15.
I've got 17 years on you. But I think it is also a generational thing, because, again, when I was younger, even though I was playing some of these other games, I loved the quick fix. I loved that game going bananas. But what I would like to say is, if there are any video game developers or publishers or anything listening to this, we do own the copyright on this concept, by the way. And if you do see it come out,
I don't think we do.
Jeff has a Kickstarter to fund, for God's sake.
MJG. It's Marcus Jeff and Garnet.
Oh, I like that. Sorry. I like that.
MJG. It's our design company.
I'm right here, you guys.
MJGN.
Like, you can see me. They can.
Well,
No, it's cool.
You are
Nicole,
so far above
Nicole
us.
Will do our shooting mechanics.
Yeah.
Nicole will be
fascinated.
The wise storyteller.
Nicole's the multiplayer designer.
Whatever, guys. That's where the money's going to come in.
It's
so our season passes.
You guys and your artsy-fartsy game.
I know.
Good luck with that.
We will
chumps.
Be massive failures.
Yeah.
We'll be amazing in the, like, 32 and over crowd.
Yeah, but you think about it. We laugh now, but by the time we get this game made, the median age of the gamer will be 55, and it'll be virtual retirement.
Jesus.
You got, you're on a porch.
That's
it's
the
like
name
X
of our
to
game.
Rock forward, Y to rock back.
Our no game is called guys. Virtual Retirement. There's a golf mini game.
Depends.
Depends.
Oh, dear goodness. So, not surprisingly, it was the escalation of combat in Mass Effect 3, though, that really helped propel it into really great broad acceptance. And
what a
put
good
it
game.
Master of the Segway!
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
If you're going to talk about Mass Effect 3, I'm going to the bathroom.
Really?
Come
not,
on.
Not a fan?
Mass Effect 2 was the pinnacle for me. It, got, yeah. it basically it got the story balance right, it got the RPG balance right, and it got the action balance right. After that, it basically crawled up its own...
My favorite was Mass Effect 1.
Mass Effect 1, I take over. That. I would take over Mass Effect 3 as well.
I know you disagree, but and lots of people do, but it, that was my favorite.
I'm in
as
Team
the
Marcus
RPG.
Over here. I think Mass,
oh, yeah, Mass
2
Effect 2 is
really...
my, it's in my, I think my second favorite game of all time.
And you know my knock against Mass Effect 2 is that the entire game is we're putting together the team, and then we put together the team, and it's just like, oh, we go fight Chrome Dome, and it's over.
Yeah, no, that's great, though.
I don't think any of those three games deserve the status that they have in the
really?
Popular zeitgeist.
Any of them?
I don't think that series lives up to the love that people have.
Ariel,
for it,
don't wreck the car. Please don't wreck the car. She's listening right now. She's like, I love.
Because like, even my hatred of the Mass Effect 3 endings didn't. I mean, it took me a few months to get over it, I'll be honest. But, I mean, I still love the series so much that I kept buying the DLC. Even though I swore I wouldn't. I was one of those people who, like, hated the ending so much. So I'm like, I'm not going to buy anything. And then I bought everything.
You and Andrea have to have a battle to find out who's the biggest super fan of Mass Effect.
Well, dude, like I said, Ariel's up there, too. She's bought it all, too.
It's the ladies love it.
Citadel is like 4-something gigs. Seriously, it's like 4
it's, and you have
gigs.
To download it separately,
in 2 pieces.
Which is annoying.
In 2 pieces?
Yeah.
I want
so
my
I take
PS4
you play
to
the
have
Citadels.
Downloaded it for me already.
It knows. It knows you're going to want it. Okay, so yeah, I mean, I guess we segued into that because that's what I've been playing. I haven't been playing very many video games lately. I've been on a comic book kind of...
Oh, what are you reading?
I just finished the first book of Fatal, and I'm on volume
awesome.
3 of The Sandman.
Oh, wow, old school.
And then I did a few... I'm on Gambit, I'm doing The End Times, and I'm doing Blackacre, or like the you know, little trades.
Very cool.
So I've been on that kind of trip lately.
Have
so,
you read Sweet Tooth?
No.
Think you would like it?
No, that and Saga, people have
Saga's
mentioned to
cool
me.
Saga's cool, too.
Okay. So those are that's what I've been doing. I've been taking a little game break, waiting for Gears and Bioshock, and I guess Tomb Raider. Thanks, guys.
Oh, you should totally play it.
Have you read Day Tripper?
Mm-mm.
Best in my top 3 of all-time graphic novels.
All right. Mental note.
Gabriel Baugh. Amazing. Go ahead.
I don't know what you just said, but he's so Mass Effect 3 DLC is what I kind of made an exception for, and it's if you're a Mass Effect fan, it's I'm going to say something you should check out because it's basically it's 17 small missions, and together it's probably 75% battle, 25% shopping for party supplies.
Are you talking about Citadel?
Citadel.
Okay.
Yeah. So Mass Effect 3 Citadel supplies. Came out on March 5th. I think all platforms. It does have to be downloaded in 2 separate chunks for
it's
some
a
reason.
Monster,
you pay for
so
one
big.
And then you go play and then it says you don't have it and then you have to go get the free one, but there's both 2 gigabytes and whatever. So I mean, I don't know how much I can say about it because it's the very premise is a spoiler. Like can I just spoil it?
I think you should just
well, we can label it as such and say, we're about to spoil your party supply game.
Right.
No, the beginning part.
The remainder of this segment will be a spoiler for Mass Effect
3. It's the whole plot.
Is it a spoiler for the end of Mass Effect 3 or a spoiler for this game?
No, but spoiler, the end of Mass Effect 3 sucks. So as long as you know that.
Okay.
No secret.
So let's move on.
Okay. So, yes, I can spoil it? I mean,
yeah, like... If someone wants to tune out, they tune out. Tune out for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and we'll be back with the final period.
If you really
period,
love Mass Effect 3, you've already played it.
You've played it. Like, if you're buying the DLC, you played Mass Effect 3.
The game's been out for almost a year. Everybody else can kiss your ass now. Come on.
Okay, so basically, you are given shore leave when you're stranded on the Citadel, and it's opened up to new parts of the Citadel. There's, like, a casino, and there's an armory where you can have these... you can set up battles. So it's basically single-player and multiplayer, which is fun for people who don't have friends. And so those are kind of some of the new features. But the main plot of it is you and Joker go to this really fancy sushi restaurant, which is apparently a big deal because no one can get reasurations. And
space sushi.
Do you know how hard it is to get tuna in deep space?
Oh,
it's pretty
difficult.
Tough, you
very
guys.
Difficult.
And then this Alliance soldier comes up to you and says that you're being hunted, and these mercs attack you, and you basically go on this goose chase, kind of chasing these mercs and figuring out why these mercs are trying to kill you. And it's kind of, layout-wise, it's very much like Shadow Broker from, not Shadow Broker, Kasumi's DLC from Mass Effect 2, where you kind of have to infiltrate that fancy party and Kasumi can become invisible.
Have we
invisible.
Done the spoiler yet? Have we already done the spoiler?
Oh, no. I'm just explaining to you what's going on. Okay.
So the spoiler was the lack of California roll.
People are going to go 10 minutes ahead and we still haven't even said this.
Okay, so spoiler. The main bad guy is you. You have been cloned because of the Lazarus Project. When Cerberus revived you and rebuilt you, they made a separate you just to harvest for parts. And one of these Cerberus members disagreed with how... What's the word for hating aliens? Like
xenophobia.
So she's a xenophobe, and she hates that you are friends with so many aliens, and you have such... Basically, she hates you for being popular, and it's kind of what it stems to. And so she...
It's like Wicked.
This is why girls love Mass Effect.
It's true. It's true. There's love, and there's
drama.
Popularity contest.
Funny. You say it's like Wicked. I'm just seeing Pluto gnash in my head.
Okay, so the clone basically gets power and wants to kill you and replace you because she doesn't think that you're worthy of living, blah, blah, blah. You fight her. Actually, her boss battle is like, I bitched about it for like ever. It was a really hard boss battle because she's your equal.
Bass bottle.
And that's so
fishing segments that's next.
Bass bottle
and so
is...
If you're Vanguard, like I was, it was really hard, but you can always lower the difficulty, which is what I did. So after you fight her, that's all the boring part. The good part is you get to buy new bedspreads for your new apartment.
What?
New couches. You go buy party supplies. You can invite your friends over for one-on-one chats.
One-on-one chats, y'all!
One-on-one chats with your crew. And
on my new bedspread.
And then you get to throw a house party with like snacks and music, and it goes on for like 20 minutes.
Are kid and play there?
No, they're in space, so they're not there. They're on Earth.
What's happening
now? But it's great because you get to say, good to have a party for your crew.
It's Mass Effect, Hello Kitty, Boo Boo Island Adventure.
Ain't no party like a Mass Effect party.
Glyph has a bow tie?
What has happened to BioWare?
You guys,
is there a quest where you actually jump the shark?
No. Why are you guys... No, because... All you have to do is
you buy the
motorcycle. That you lived at the end and that everything worked
out,
and then you threw that party for your crew at the very end. So you just lie to yourself and say, this is the new ending.
The new ending is Ewoks dancing?
We wanted that. We all know we wanted that. So then you get to have a party.
Wait,
and it's great. And
this
it's
is
like
the party you always...
We all wanted the Empire ending?
Take a group picture. Jedi. You take a group picture with everyone.
You take a group picture?
At the very end, everyone, your whole crew, like Samara and Kasumi and Zaid, they all get together.
Jedi ending, yes.
Yeah, Jedi. Well, no one died. Everyone on my crew lived, by the way.
Well, that makes for a much better party.
Yeah, it did. Little Krogan, little Grunt and Rex were a little, you know, button heads. But they do that. So then everybody gets on the couch, and then you say, Normandy, instead of cheese. And they take a picture.
No, they don't! No, yeah. They don't!
Yeah. It was the best. It was
they
the best.
They say Normandy!
They say Normandy.
Never mind, they did totally jump the shark.
It was the best! All my friends and I were like, they just like freaking out about it and sending each other screenshots. We're all girls, so maybe that's... But
wait,
where's Anita Sarkeesian when we need her?
Is there a picture?
Marcus is completely like taking off his headphones and back.
Yeah,
he has no idea.
Because based
on
what clothes that you got from him, what bedspreads and shit.
Okay, well, I was wearing the dress that I got from the Kasumi DLC.
Right, as
it back,
everybody
gown,
would.
Most girls do.
Sure.
And then so everyone's...
I'm kind of curious what Anita would say about all this.
Everyone's picture is different.
I think a head would explode.
Oh, you're showing me your picture?
Oh, I took pictures, guys. So
everybody's picture is different, you guys. Come on.
Yeah, well, I took a bunch of pictures of me and Kaden together.
What's really funny is she wasn't playing as Femshep.
So the picture.
So, all right, so it reduces Mass Effect to where we can now share pictures.
There really is. It's like the beginning of Friends. Everyone is sitting, like, looking at each other.
One of them is playing in the fountain.
Start to come.
Yeah.
I could write the whole thing.
Oh, boy.
See, but I don't know what you guys are disappointed with. I mean, there was 75% of that was I'm...
Oh my God! Shepard is saluting. Oh no, who's that? Who's that? It's not Shepard. Who's saluting?
Like Caden?
Oh, that's Jacob, James Vega. Oh yeah,
my
there's one
God,
point in the game.
They're all sitting around the table.
Okay, so there's one point in the DLC where Vega's doing punches like at the punching bag, and he challenges you to do pull-ups, and you do a pull-up left and then right, and then you do 183 of them, and you don't get anything.
She literally has dozens of photos on here.
Don't
call
me on my photos. But yeah, no, I do.
There's so many pictures of the end of this DLC on your phone. You just took a picture of your television.
And then, yeah, I don't have a caption thing.
You're adorable.
And then I also took, I also made a collage in Frames, that app, so I could Instagram those pictures and share them with my friends.
You guys, we have to put the, we have to link this photo in the show notes. You, it's, who cares if it's a spoiler? It's amazing.
Well, I mean, this part's not really, this was in the trailer with the Normandy thing, so...
The, really?
Yeah.
We have lost Marcus entirely.
Come on! I sat through SimCity and Lara Croft.
She did.
Good
come
point.
On,
she did.
No, you did.
Look how happy we are.
Look how happy we are. I think it's amazing that this game...
Can we have a cigarette break, please?
We can, and when we have a break...
I'm going to cry.
I think it's amazing that this game progressed to this point. I think it actually is
it's
a really amazing testimony to its...
I need to talk to you more about
emotional
this.
Power.
Okay.
You
there's Zergrush.
Do you have and I'm not judging this.
Okay.
I'm
no,
not judging you.
What's there to judge?
Honestly. Do you have an emotional connection to the character like you would in a movie or a TV show? Or
oh something? Yeah.
You do.
Absolutely. Since Mass Effect 1, I have loved Rex and I have loved Caden and I have hated Ashley.
Really?
Stupid bitch.
I never felt a connection to any of the characters in Mass Effect. Is that because
most BioWare games I do have a connection to the characters. I'm also playing SWTOR again.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just love as much as we can say EA has been doing things to the company, I love BioWare. I like Dragon Age 2.
So do I.
Yeah. Okay,
so
most do I. People don't like Dragon
I
Age 2.
I finished my cat.
Your cat is saluting. I'm just fascinated. I'm fascinated by this. So it gives you joy. To, I mean, this is like fan service for you.
Yeah.
You're the target audience.
The whole thing was fan service. There was jokes and there was like nods to the Mako and like it was there was funny moments. This whole thing was just.
I think based.
This was there. I'm sorry.
So sorry.
So sorry.
I think based purely on your reaction, and your reaction, I'm sure, is not unique. I'm sure there's a bunch of people. This is a huge success and something that we can't. You can't dismiss.
Oh, it's amazing.
This.
I'm not. I was joking, but when I realized how like absolutely lit up Nicole's eyes were,
you have
I was
to
like,
respect Facebook
it. This
header
is fucking amazing.
Right now.
You have to respect it because it's that's an accomplishment.
No, more than respect it. You have to like really go, wow, that's.
It's an accomplishment to create video game characters that are the. I mean, I was shouting a whole segment ago about Lara Croft kind of ascending to mythical status again, iconic status again. But these characters for you are more than video game characters, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're my friends.
Don't say it.
This thing that you know, they are to a generation what Indiana Jones was and Luke and Leia and Han were to us.
Certainly, the Luke and Leia and Han
piece.
I
have a hard time.
I mean, obviously, I was like holding my head in my hands and chuckling and whatever. But it is cool, and I got to say, I'm so attached to my FemShep that you know that's one of the reasons I was so disappointed with Mass Effect 3 because I'd had the same character all the way through the first two games, and then as soon as I'm into Mass Effect 3, something feels off about it, and it just doesn't seem to be the FemShep that I created, the character that in my mind, acted in certain ways and did certain things, and that's why for me Mass Effect 3 was a grave disappointment.
And at the end, the latter half of the game especially, I didn't even have the option to be the shepherd that I had created, and that was very frustrating for me. But again, party supplies.
I guess I
can tell you what I take away from this. I take away from this a strong encouragement for anyone out there who is in a position to support a undertaking the scale of Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, that yes, character persistence and progression through a trilogy that's more than just, here's a cliffhanger, come back and play the next game in 2 years, really matters.
I think this is where episodic gaming can really come in, because you can do it so well in episodic gaming.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I was sitting here going, is there any video game where I care about the characters? And Walking Dead. Yeah.
All right, stick around. We will come back. And I think when we kick off this final segment, we will let Nicole catch us up on previously in Gears of War.
It'll all be factual. Oh.
Who you know fresher than hoe? Riddle me that. The rest of y'all know where I'm lurking, yeah. Can't none of y'all mirror me back. Yeah, hear me rap, it's like Angie rapping his prime. I'm Young H.O., rap's grateful dead. Back to take over the globe, and I break bread. I'm in Boeing jets, Global Express. Out the country, but the blueberries still connect. On the low, but the yacht got a triple deck. But when you young, what the fuck you expect? Yep, yep. Grand opening, grand closing. Goddamn your manhole, crack the can open again. Who you gonna find open a hand with no pen? Just draw inspiration. Who you gonna see? You can't replace him with cheap imitations from these generations. I got an encore. Do you want more? Cook and roll with the Brooklyn Balls.
Mad, mad propers to Tumelo. Tumelo laying down the amazing mashup of Jay-Z and the Chrono Trigger Pretty soundtrack, awesome. Which is completely free on SoundCloud. I tweeted it out already. And the whole damn thing is literally that good where it's you just like, it sounds like it's been together from the outset. It's
so awesome.
Yeah, it's totally amazing. It's totally amazing. Highly, highly recommend it. And again, mad, mad, mad props to Tumelo. That's number two, Mello, M-E-L-L-O.
He's not like Tumelo. He's like the right amount of mellow.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's just the right.
He's more than one mellow.
Yeah.
So you get that free on SoundCloud, and then I will I'll hop on the Shaq News thread and make sure that I have a link to it as well. I also linked to it on Twitter earlier this week, like Tuesday or so. Anyway, that's awesome. Now, coming up, yes, Gears of War Judgment about to get in there, which we were gonna have a conversation last week about Back to the Well one too many times, because you know God of War also out. And
yeah, Ascension, right?
Prequel Mania.
Prequel Mania, and then lots of games coming back to the well, and I'm there's definitely some room to be concerned about going back to the well one too many times. The God of War reviews have been, I would say, mixed for a God of War game.
I would say for a God of War game, I'm surprisingly unexcited about playing it. Like I usually would be chomping at the bit for a new God of War.
Well, it's interesting that the biggest uproar in a game that has always had sex minigames is the name of an achievement that really wasn't offensive to me. Or, I mean, I just feel
Do you know the context?
Well,
it's,
I mean,
it's offensive.
There's a ton of things in that game that could be considered offensive to women.
Sess handled it really well. If you aren't familiar with this situation in God of War, there's a sequence where you use the, upgraded fist things, what are they called? Cestuses, I guess. And you brutally pummel a woman.
The phrase you're looking for is batter the living shit out of.
Have you seen it?
Oh, I've been playing. I started playing the game on Monday.
And then you get an achievement that's bros before hoes.
Which they have changed now to.
So the offensive part is the
they changed the achievement
name, not the action?
Wow. Well, it's a shame that they didn't. I just like the whole notion of it is just it's I can't even speak. It like it renders me so like dumbfounded.
It's ill-conceived. And yeah, they did patch it on Monday or Tuesday. I mean it's interesting, Nicole, that you know you're here as a woman and you're not offended by it. I think this also speaks.
Well, the
to,
name doesn't offend me. There's a bigger thing.
I think
it's a problem.
It's the context.
It was the context.
It's the implication.
The way it follows on. And you know, let's face it. You're right. God of War has always been about you know sex and violence and big boobs, especially on the guys.
Multiple of them.
Multiple, and you know that is part of it. But I mean, just this pairing and this particular bit of viciousness seems to have been almost wanton in it, you know.
Oh, it was like, way over the line.
You know, courting controversy.
No, more so than beating hookers in GTA, or is it just a different timing thing?
So, I think that the censure here was outside of the fiction. So, breaking the wall, you then get the achievement that is bros before hoes. It's sort of like that's taking it out of the.
It's pretty graphic as well.
It's very graphic.
I mean, look, the graphic GTA. I mean, it's not. I mean, GTA. Yeah. I mean, yes, you can beat up the hooker and stuff. It's more cartoon. I mean,
you're not close up smashing a woman's face into a bloody pulp.
You guys are kind of splitting hairs there.
Well, God of War makes GTA and that particular aspect of GTA look like Lego City Undercover.
I do think it is gradations.
I agree.
On the scale.
No, I agree. But I think that the thing that was the real lightning rod around this was not just the in-game event, but like the look. The achievement is outside of the game. The achievement is.
No, I agree. And the implication. The implication of that achievement is so crass and it as you said, over the line.
Well, I think it's interesting. Sorry, just to carry on with this just for another minute or so. I do think it's interesting that Nicole, you haven't seen it, and I'd be interested to see what your reaction is after perhaps you've seen the video of it. But I mean, the way I look at it, I mean, I saw what Adam had to say, and I've got a lot of love for Adam, and I see, you know, a lot of people obviously talking about it. I personally found it offensive. But I find it interesting that, I mean, honestly, the only ones who, in my opinion, are perhaps qualified to stand up and rip this a new one are the ones who are the targets, the women. I mean, you know, let's face it, I am a 42-year-old white guy. And, you know, it's offensive to me, but I can't really stand up and talk about feminism stuff when I grew up watching Benny Hill. When, you know, I watched the Porky's movies, that sort of stuff. And that's what I watched, even though I wasn't supposed to.
Well, you can be more enlightened
as a kid. But I mean, yeah, you do. I think you do evolve. But I think this is the problem we're coming into, is that we do get some journalists who, like Sessler, perhaps within our age group, who have been through various, you know, things and are more enlightened and are looking at it from one perspective. But then you do have a whole bunch of a section of the media who seem to me just to be waving the feminist flag just to be cool. And I'm talking about guys now who are doing it time and time again, who complain about every single aspect because they know it will get them Twitter views, it will get them followers, it will get them page views. And those guys, unfortunately, are becoming a real problem in the games industry because they're blurring the bigger issue. Because they're almost hijacking it and trying to be cool, and when half the arguments they put out are just total bullshit anyway.
There's grandstanding around a lot of issues, but I don't think that
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
But when the Dead Island 2 or Dead Island Riptide, the torso came out, mm-hmm. like, it was so quickly just the worst thing, and it became to the point where if I said that I wasn't offended by it, I was bullied by a bunch of men. Like, a bunch of men on Twitter and blogs told me that this was the most offensive thing, and then when I said I wasn't offended personally, I mean, I agree. I mean, you have valid points, but at the end of the day, it's a zombie torso. Like, there's bigger issues that I think that we should focus on. This doesn't offend me. I was bullied, and I was told that I was wrong, and I'm anti-feminist because I'm not offended by this, according to those guys.
This is not a gaming only issue, by the way, in our society.
Yeah.
Certainly not. And I know that there's going to be a lot of whatever. Let me just ask you this question: do you think that torso is a zombie before it's a woman? Do you think that the central issue of what they're showing you is a zombie? Because I don't.
Yeah. I mean,
really?
Well,
you think
it's
you think that the imagery
that
they're showing?
Dead or Alive bikini skins came out, and there was no outcry there, and those are actually people or portraying people.
But
we pick and choose things, and those things are awful, and everything else we're just going to ignore.
No.
Well, the gaming industry does a lot of the time.
Well, that's a fair point, but it's a different point.
Mm-hmm.
The making a relativistic argument, I think, muddies what is a fair point about a specific situation. You can say, in comparison to other things, it may not be bad, but that's neither here nor there. That's really kind of a different conversation.
And to be honest, when I looked at it, I saw a zombie torso. I didn't think to myself, oh, sweet.
Do you think that's what made it cool? Was that it was a zombie torso? What they were trying to deliver to their audience?
No, they were trying to make something raunchy and worthy of talking about.
And don't forget, this is something that wasn't for the U.S. market. This was something in the U.K.
So where, it's your people we should be angry at.
Well, no. I mean, seriously, and I did a whole Annoyed Gamer episode about this where I actually said, you know, I sat and talked to my wife about it. Don't forget, this is called the Zombie Bait Edition. And it is a decapitated, no arms, no legs torso that is basically there as bait for zombies. Zombie bait. B-A-I-T. Not zombie bait as in masturbate. Zombie bait as in fishing bait. That's what I took from it.
But let's be honest. Neither one would be good.
I showed the picture to my wife and we had a chat. And she turned around and said, all those people bitching and moaning about it, they really need to, one, get a sense of humor and, two, go get laid. And that's my wife who's, you know, she basically saw it for what it was, taking it within the context. She lives with a Brit. She has been back to the UK many times. She's very immersed in British culture. And that is something that, you know, we, if anything, as a Brit, we probably would have found the violence that was attached to the torso probably more offensive than the actual torso itself, because we find the violence in general more offensive in our culture than we do nudity. But then it, you know, it came to light over here. I mean, there was a Zombie You ad in the UK where it was an attractive girl in a bikini, and it said body to die for, and you turned the page and the second half of the ad was that she was a zombie. But some, you know, amateur hour journalist over here decided to get offensive, you know, get offended by it, even though it was in the UK mag, and just decided to become a champion against this thing. And I just want to, you know, meet that individual and slap some sense into him, because it's like, you know what, you have a penis, you have no right to comment on this shit, shut the hell up, let the women talk about it, and if the women get offended in the UK, then that's fine, otherwise it's none of your fucking business.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, I think that it's perfectly within their right to have that be a marketing tool, and they're perfectly within their right to put that achievement in God of War. But I, as a consumer of their product, I can certainly say I find it tasteless, and it makes me less likely to buy your product. And it, I think it sheds a poor light on a hobby that I happen to be passionate about. So I don't care for it.
As an American, you couldn't be a consumer of that particular product. Just because it was UK only.
Oh, no. Well, yeah. Whatever, God of War, whatever. Yeah. Whatever the case may be in these situations, I don't think it's out of off limits for me to say, man, I hate the fact that if I want to buy your product, I sort of have to tacitly endorse this viewpoint. So.
And they've already, I mean, they have patched it. It's gone.
Right.
You know,
it's not gone.
You know, well, no, the trophy has been renamed.
Yeah.
The second trophy name actually is a way smarter and you know, a really good play on the phrase that, you know, really doesn't then go off into, you know, saying that all women are whores. I mean, because that's the generalization that, you know, I would take from Bros Before Hoes is that, you know.
No, what I found, I mean, we can just parse this to death, and people are already probably tired of us talking about it, but what's offensive to me is the idea that to stand up for your masculinity, you have to brutally destroy the female. I mean, that's kind of the implication is Bros Before Hoes, well, I'm going to smash this woman into bits because I don't respect her as much as I do my own gender. And you know, that's why I
found Bros Before Hoes way more offensive, and that violence way more offensive than Zombie Bait or the Wii U ad, Zombie U ad, because that to me was more tongue in cheek kind of humor as opposed to the full on violence of anybody. But I mean, just the way that to me was the more offensive thing.
And clearly, they are trying to be funny.
Like, that's, to me, the only thing that really bothers me is that you're getting a special achievement for hitting a woman, which is, you wouldn't, would you get that same achievement for hitting a man? I guess that, to me, would be
only in Tomb Raider.
You get a lot of achievements for killing a lot of things in a lot of games. So.
Is that also the patch that added the fun? The God of War patch?
I still haven't found any.
Oh, that's what I was going to
say.
Kind
burn.
Of giving you a lead. Are you enjoying it?
No, I can't stand it. To be honest with you,
I didn't realize Statler and Waldorf were going to be on the show this week.
Look, I'll be honest with you.
Those guys are.
Really?
Muppets?
Yes,
okay.
Come on.
I didn't like God of War 3.
By the way, for the record, I said I loved Tomb Raider.
Yeah, that's the takeaway
sure
of that
like
conversation.
It.
Yeah, look, with God of War 3, I could appreciate it. I could, appreciate why people liked it. Wasn't my cup of tea. God of War Ascension, to me, is just you say one, you know, returning to the well one time too many. It's gameplay from hell, 2002, in my opinion. It's too linear. The quick times, the, you know, just this, you know, combo, get your score up, combo, walk down a corridor, set piece to set piece.
But that's what that series is, right? I mean, would you not want
and
that?
And you know, that's not, yeah, again, that's not my, like I said, it's not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
All right, that's fair. So also then leading up to this, Gears of War with a new developer, people can fly at the helm. They who did a pretty good job with Bulletstorm, I think.
I loved that game.
It's a brilliant game.
We all had a lot of fun with Bulletstorm.
Talk about a game with tasteless humor.
Yeah.
But still fun.
Dick tits.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's all good fun.
I doubt they will have that sort of jocularity in Judgment, but we'll find out next week. Obviously, a lot of folks will be playing Judgment, you know, and a lot of folks very upset that Horde mode has been taken out of the game.
Weird move, in my opinion. Because that's my favorite mode.
I know. It was a weird move, and I think in general. I mean, they have the new Assault thing that's, a riff on it, but it's not, like, Horde mode not being there is going to be interesting to see community reaction.
Yeah, you know why, though.
So it can be better when the next-gen Gears comes out?
Thank you. we're a month away from the new Xbox. You're telling me that we won't have
Marcus
Gears of War
4? Marcus is back!
It's not a mainline Gears
guy.
I never left.
It's Marcus's son. Oh, my God.
I don't have any kids.
You know of.
If you were curious, though, about what's gone on so far in Gears of War, we have Nicole here to catch us up.
So, very briefly.
Wait, what's her theme song? She needs a theme song for this.
Go ahead.
Story time.
Never-ending story.
Oh,
just Lamar.
Kind of.
She won't say half the story. She'll say the whole.
Okay, so we'll work on it.
Off the top of my head.
We'll work on that. Okay, so Gears of War Judgment comes out next week, next Tuesday, and it's a prequel. So it takes place not the Emergence Day War, because that would be too easy, because that's going to be another prequel series, I guarantee you. So this is after that. So in between Emergence Day and Gears of War 1. So it stars Barrett and Cole, and everyone knows they're secretly lovers, and it makes sense if you played Gears 1, 2, and 3. So I'm going to take you back to kind of catch up on the series where I don't really know why you need to be caught up because it's a prequel, but here's what's happening. So Gears of War 1 takes place on Sarah. It takes place 14 years after Emergence Day. So you have your Marcus, who is trapped in a prison because he tried to help his dad and he wasn't supposed to. So family values are not important on Sarah. That's the first takeaway from this game. So Dom rescues him. They get in a helicopter, if I'm remembering correctly. They have banter. The banter's great. And at one point, Kim dies, spoiler, and he sucks because you just had a kid. Like, what kind of game says, I just had a son or something like that? And then he dies.
One without family values.
So, I don't know, Gears 1. So they want to find all the tunnels, so they get the resonator, and they want to, flush out all the locusts. It ends up taking them back to where they all started with Adam's dad at his lab. And so then they have a big battle there, but what they really need to do is fight General Ram, R-A-A-M, on a train, because train battles are really cool. We learned that from Uncharted 2, but we learned that first from Gears of War 1. Okay, so then Gears of War 2, but everything's happy. Everything's happy, but there's Queen voiceover. What is a queen? Queen of what? Okay, so Gears 2. So that's 6 months later, everything's peaceful, but it's not peaceful.
No.
Because all that flushing has brought the lambency, no.
Lambent.
Lambent.
Yeah.
No, but what's the stuff called?
The just glowy bits?
Yeah, it makes lambent wretches, the emulsion.
Emulsion!
All that juice, right?
Yeah.
So,
the slime is under the building.
Yeah, so that's been vaporized and it's turning people, it's making people sick. It's making
them. It's like locust Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yeah. It's Ghostbusters 2, basically,
yep.
Yes?
Exactly.
A little bit. Oh, a little bit. A lot of giant things.
That's what I was saying. The slime is under the building.
So things are peaceful, but they're not. The last remaining human cities are being taken into sinkholes. I'm like, oh my God, why? We killed the locust, but you didn't. So while this is going on, there is a civil war happening underground. Lambent locusts versus non-lambent locusts. And so they're fighting and stuff. And then so we decide to take the war to them because they're threatening Jacinta, which is the last human stronghold. They should probably move. My takeaway from that. So while that's happening,
they wait for FEMA to turn up.
Yeah, good luck.
They should probably move.
There's been some budget cuts. I don't know if they've gotten that memo. So they have to go down with these grind lifts. Oh, but before they do that, or at one point, they get in a giant worm, and then they chainsaw its arteries, and that's a whole level. And then they cut out of the worm, and it's really disgusting, and I kind of just wish it wasn't there. Family values. So then Dom finds Maria, guys. All that whining in Gears 1. Oh, Maria. He's the only buddy who had, lost anything. So he finally finds her, and, she has a shaved head and, a lobotomy, and she's been tortured and whatever. And then he shoots her. Really? I mean, sure, she's been suffering, but he shoots her?
Maybe she was really hot with her hair grown out.
Marcus was there
to
comfort.
Okay,
Marcus was there to comfort him, though. And I mean,
can we just call him Phoenix for God's sake? You get him very confused every time you use the M word.
Okay. So Phoenix. Well, because there's two Phoenixes. Not yet. Shh. It's Gears 3. So, okay, so he kills Maria, and then then there's the queen. There's a locust queen. And even though, like, in Gears 1, there's only one female locust, which isn't... Okay, so there's a billion locusts, but there's one female that we know, the Berserker. And she's blind and gross, and you kill her with the Hammer of Dawn. Okay, so how do you explain so many locusts? I don't know. I don't know if they ever really did. I don't care. But the queen is hot for some reason. Like, why is she human-looking? Don't answer, because I'd rather, like... I read some, like, Adam Phoenix... Queen Mira fanfic that makes it a lot more interesting than whatever the truth is. She wants to. Oh, and then there's Scourge, who's like Darth Maul, but with like the Predator. Like if Darth Maul and the Predator had a baby, it'd be Scourge. So then they fight him, and then the Queen wants to sink the city because she wants to fight the Lambin as well. And then so they decide to like blow up a Burmak, which would make a great stuffed animal. I've told Epic PR that would make a great plushie.
Blown up Burmaks?
Uh-huh. So they blow up the Burmak, and then everybody wins. But at the very end, you hear Adam Phoenix's voice. What? He's still alive? Ends. Okay, so Gears 3. Gears 3 takes 2 years after that. Humanity's on some islands. It's pretty boring. Humanity,
it's like Waterworld.
It's a little bit like Waterworld. It's not like Waterworld. So then Prescott, the chairman or the president or whatever they're... government goes missing. They find out that Adam Phoenix is alive and he's being captured in like Azusa. It's one of those three words I just said, or like a comment starts with an A.
Yeah,
give me that.
It's like Arcadia.
Azeroth.
Okay, so they get a submarine, and then submarines are stupid. And then they find humans, but the humans have been lambasted. They eventually are lambasted. And then it's like the most stupidest scene ever where like they need to get by something or something and they need to like have an explosion. So then Dom's like, oh, I'll blow myself up and then I'll open it. And like that was really dumb. And like if we had
really
drones
dumb.
In that game, this wouldn't have happened. I'm just saying, pushing the drone agenda. I'm just kidding. I'm not. So then they team up with some civilians who aren't Lambin, and then they find Adam Phoenix, who's in Azusa, and turns out that the Queen and Adam are, like, again, lovers, as I read in fanfic, and they were working on a cure to fight the Lambency, and he never got it finished, and in the war, because of the war, he never was able to enact the cure, and Marcus is like, no, I'll save you, I'll save everyone, and then Mira pops up out of the ground. She's the Queen, she's the bitchy ex-girlfriend of Adam, and she tries to stop him, so then Marcus stabs her with Dom's knife, so it's like Dom was there still. With all of us. And then this blue light goes out. So it's for Mass Effect fans. It's the blue ending. And then they win.
And then they win.
And then they win.
That's the story. And now you know it's story time with Nicole.
It's a different song than before.
It's the same song.
different
lyrics. There you go. People who make YouTube versions of this, please.
I didn't even talk about the krill. Oh my god, the krill.
The YouTube version of your Pokemon is one of my favorite things in the world.
Well, what I'd like to see is that was it the Taiwanese or the Korean animators who basically I would love to see them do your take on the Gears franchise.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I'd pay
for
that.
Weird like
Let's start a Kickstarter.
Animation.
Marcus, you have to see. She did the same thing for Pokemon, and I wish I could.
Gen 1.
I can remember who it was that animated it. Somebody somebody did an
awesome YouTube animation. Oh, it's amazing.
Okay. I apologize, listener,
totally
for not remembering your name.
Nick, I believe.
Was it? Amazing. So, amazing. You're amazing.
Marcus and Jeff, do you guys, before we close this thing out, do you have any quick comments, quick takes on the Legos? Lego City Undercover for Wii U.
Lego City loading times?
Yeah, 45 okay. second load times are a pain in the ass. But what I will say is the whole vibe of it, the 80s cop show vibe, the music, it's great. There's so many pop culture references in there. There's a Matrix segment. There's you know, you can see Starsky and Hutch in there. I mean, it's really, you know, if you grew up on those 80s cop shows, like I did, it's brilliant. I will say it's probably the best Lego game.
Got a little TJ Hooker in there.
I wish there were more games.
I haven't got to him yet, but I'm sure he's in there.
I wish there were more games that were sort of like a Naked Gun. I mean, this is literally a game that you can't talk about 30 seconds of fun repeated. It's 30. There's not a joke. There's a joke every 30 seconds at least.
Yeah, and it's not a wasted joke either.
But I found the mechanics to be really frustrating. The driving was insufferable.
Or the I mean, at the end of the day, you're driving a Lego car.
I guess.
Which to be fair, have you switched up to some of the more powerful cars?
No, I've barely played any of it. Okay,
do you still have the square bricks for wheels?
No, once you get into some of the more sporty cars and you have the turbo, and there are bits there that are Grand Theft Auto with Lego bricks. There are bits there that are Saints Row. And just being able to do, speed jumps off a ramp, crash through a mall.
The Lego purple dildos are amazing.
A little bit knobbly, though. but no, it's a fun game. I got to say, I've been excited for this one for a while. I do like my Lego games. I really enjoyed it way more than perhaps the last few Lego games in particular. I'm very glad there's no co-op and multiplayer in it. It's a single-player experience. And after I finish this up, I'm going to go home and play some more.
All right. Well, then we'll let you. We will hop into finishing moves so you can get back to more Undercover.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
All right. I will kick this sucker off. I got a two-parter. Both of them are, I feel like Indie Jeff, they're both iOS things. The first one is Ridiculous Fishing. And if the name alone doesn't lure you into playing Glambeers.
Lure?
Yes, exactly. Right, like guys, was like,
are you trying to get us on the hook for this?
Yes. Look, it's amazing. Glambeer's new game is absolutely amazing. It's awesome. It's so fun. It's so stupid fun. I'm really hopeful they're successful because they are eschewing the popular move to free to play. It's $2.99. It's a universal, so you get it on your iPad, your iPhone, and it is this simple. You are sitting in a boat in a 2D world. It looks very like
I'm in a boat.
It's very Nintendo like. You drop your lure, and your lure goes down through the the 2D plane of the water, and you're trying to dodge fish, and you can go down as far as you have line. You can buy more line to get deeper and deeper, and once you get to the bottom of your line or you run into a fish, then the line starts going up, and now you're trying to tag the fish, and you tag the fish to catch them, and then you get to the surface of the water and the fish go flying up in the air and you pull out your gun and you shoot them down to score points.
What?
Yes,
just like real fishing.
And the first initial upgrades you will get are things like a chainsaw on your lure, so that when you're dropping your lure down, you don't really have to like guide it around other fish. You just turn on the chainsaw and chainsaw right through fish. And then you get upgrades like an Uzi, an assault rifle, things to help you shoot down the fish that you catch. It's freaking hilarious. It's really fun mechanically. It works really well. It is a very, very fun, well put together mobile game. It's a hoot to play. I really like it. And then the other thing I want to do is I want to give a little support to one of our listeners, Michael Schotter, who made this Minesweeper-like game called Power Grids. We talked about it like a couple of years ago, actually. And so if you're thinking it's going to be Power Grids, like it's going to be some colorful or some 3D world thing, it's not. It is very much a Minesweeper-like game where you're reasoning out puzzle of spaces and figuring out where the grid is underneath a bunch of tiles you can't see. Anyway, he's getting ready an update, and he wants to get a bunch of player feedback, so he's making the game free for this weekend. So just this weekend, next 2 days, 16th and 17th of March, if you have any remote interest in puzzle games, go pick up Power Grids on the iTunes store. It's totally free.
Cool.
Jeff Cannata.
I also have two. The first is, again, thank you to every listener that supported my Kickstarter. I have been completely overwhelmed by the response and so grateful and so motivated to make something worthy of that. And if you haven't checked it out yet, again, trying to raise a number of backers just so that I can take that number and impress a potential distributor of the show. So consider, just throwing $1 would even be helpful. Every dollar really does help because it ups that backer number. The other thing I want to say is this Sunday I will be running my sixth marathon.
Whoa.
Woo.
And I only say that not to brag, but to say that, hey guys, it's possible. Like, we can be fans of video games and movies and stuff that's sitting around, but we can also be active and be healthy. And
I don't know how you do it.
Well, I mean, you don't have
so early.
Are you taking drugs?
No, seriously, because I work out.
Are you taking
You know that I work out and I do aerobic. Well, at the beginning of this year, I added jogging to my regular workouts, and I do like a 3.5 mile run. And I could go further if I wanted to, but I can do like a 3.5 mile run. I do it a couple times a week, dude. How do you go 26 fucking miles?
Well, you don't go 26 fucking miles right away. You work up to it. And
I'm so impressed.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm not saying this to say, hey, guys, sign up for a marathon. I am saying
think about it, I think it was Molly Wood when we were in Barcelona said something that has resonated with me and I think is going to become my new mantra. And that is that she said, sitting is this generation's smoking. And I think that's absolutely the case. And I think that
that's very astute.
The more I can do to get some geeks and sneaks and you know, get people up and moving, I think that is a vibrant part of life that can live alongside geekery.
You are the old we are the old generation. We're the smoker generation.
I like sitting and smoking.
Marcus Beer, what is your finishing move?
Oh, my finishing move. All right. Well, seeing as I am going back to my homeland next week, I just want to call out that on Saturday, Wales are playing England in the rugby, the Six Nations Championship. It's the final game. England are currently unbeaten. Wales have lost one match. If Wales beat England by 7 points, we retain the title for the second year running. And I just want to say I am so looking forward to going back to Wales and celebrating a Welsh win. And
sorry, I nodded off there. What were you talking about?
We're talking about rugby, you know, man sport.
I'll go back to sleep.
Think American football without helmets or padding or breaks every 3 seconds because somebody fought.
So with
it.
The scoring system, is that a reasonable hope to have?
Well, it's 7 points for a try, which is like a touchdown. And
try?
Yes, a try. It's a God, you Americans, seriously.
I thought there was no try, only do and do not. So.
Exactly. Oh, anything else you want me to set up for
Yoda,
you? I got Nicole.
You did.
I'm done.
Nicole blooded.
Haven't you got a party to plan for? But anyway, yes, I am looking forward to going back to my country celebrating after Wales royally stuffed the English on Saturday.
Well, have a very grand time. Well deserved.
I hope they try a lot.
Americans.
It's funny.
To you.
Nicole, you get to finish this off.
Yeah, so I think I talked about this last time I was on, but I wanted to promote my friend's comic. It's called The End Times. You can check it out at lifeandendtimes.com. It's written by my friend Jim Fistante, who, if you remember me from the game show, he hosted the game show with me, and then James Asmus, who writes for Gambit right now with Marvel. And it's a great comic, and it's about, I'm not going to tell you what it's about, but you'll love it.
It's about the end of times.
It's about the end of times.
Awesome. Yeah. Big thanks, everybody. Big thanks to @annoyedgamer. That would be Mr. Marcus Beer here.
Muchas gracias.
Look forward to having you back, and we will email coordinate the SimCity playing, and I'll probably do some more trials.
You should live stream it.
Only if you do the commentary.
Yeah.
Got it. You got it.
And, of course, very big thanks to Nicole Z, at Nicole Z here again, our new regular, doing her new thing of stories. Put in a request. What games would you like to hear Nicole chronicle? Nicole's Chronicles.
If I haven't played it, I'll play it.
I want Nicole to chronicle the Chronicles of Riddick.
That could actually be quite interesting.
You could find that.
And, of course, internet superstar Jeff Cannata. Congrats, buddy.
Thank you.
I'm excited.
How many letters?
Two N's, one T.
Okay.
Yeah.
Team, two N, one team.
Two N's, one team.
And as always, join thanks to the folks in the booth. That would be Micah running the boards for us today. And Dave maybe back in there yelling at us, you're overtime. All right, so we're overtime. That is your weekend confirmed, and we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so don't you know we playing harder? Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hear me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.